Hello? Hello?
Erja.
Hello?
Hey, Erja.
Is that Katie?
Yes, ma'am. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Good. Everybody's still getting on, so it's gonna take a while, okay?
I guess. I was told that there were five other participants. Is it just you and I?
No, everybody else is on mute right now.
Okay, I'll unmute. I mean, I'll mute.
Hey, may I give this to Lawyer? Yeah. This? Yes. Okay.
Hi, Katie. It's Paul.
Hey, Paul.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Pretty good. Lots happened since we last met, huh?
Right?
Different world.
Different, oh, different day.
Yeah.
Each day.
Yeah. So, are you, where are you at now?
Live in Albuquerque.
Oh, do you? Okay. So you're not in Silver City anymore.
No.
Yeah. Okay. So are you working yet or?
Yes,
Great. Good
I
to
work
hear.
for disability rights as their as
Oh.
one of their advocates.
Oh, okay.
So,
So do you go into the office on Wantabo or
I
not?
did one day.
You did one day. So is that closed still?
Yeah, they closed it on March 16th.
Yeah, and then so do you so you work from your apartment or what?
Yes.
Yeah, that's millions of people doing that now.
Yeah.
Yep, for sure.
It's definitely been interesting.
Oh yeah, that's for sure.
Who's 505-294-3326? I know that's Urja. I don't know who this is.
See.
Mr. Trapp is on his way in. Good afternoon, Mr. Trapp.
All right, now I should be unmuted.
You are unmuted, sir.
I'm sorry, Audrey, is that you? Oh,
Is Kelly?
hi, Kelly.
Right. I'm here as well, Greg.
All right.
Hi, Greg. It's Katie.
Let's change the microphone left there, and connect to ISST audio right there, and we'll now be used. The phone microphone. Let's change the microphone left there, and connect to ISST audio right there, and we'll now be used.
All right. Tom, are you there?
I'm here, Greg.
Very good. All right. This is always a new process here, so there's a few little getting used to adjustments that we all have to do.
Greg, I have some instructions that I wanted to kind of read to everybody. You want me to, can I do that while we're still working on things or?
Probably not a bad idea here. Hold on one second now. we should probably do the instructions once we convene the meeting. I think that would be the best way. I don't know. Audrey, how many folks do we have on board with us here?
We have 15 right now, and there is nobody in the waiting room currently, so I believe we're all connected.
All right, then I think we're ready to go. So, Tom, why don't we start our meeting just as normal, and you can read your directions when we call us to order.
Okay. Welcome, everybody. Let's go ahead and call the meeting to order at 1:07. Thank you all for joining and participating. I've got a couple of comments before we actually get started dealing with the mechanics of the meeting. This is the first time that we've had an SRC meeting using the Zoom video conference call features. I know we'll have some hiccups, we already have. Please bear with us. A few ground rules on how we want to run this meeting. I hope everyone has the email that Kelly sent that gives a few basic instructions for this call. Some of the most essential things that she sent out deal with speaking, raising your hand, muting and unmuting. I find the most challenging thing on these kind of calls, and I haven't done very many, is to remember to unmute when I want to talk. I know I've said some really, really brilliant things that nobody but me will ever hear again, because I didn't unmute myself. So if you want to speak, let's try to use the Zoom for Windows command, which is the Alt key plus the Y key. And I have to confess, I've never done that. So we'll see how that works for me, but I'm hoping you guys are more experienced than I am. If you're using a Mac, it's a little bit different. Looks like it's the command is the plus and an A. If you're using a regular phone, it's *9 or a mobile phone. So what we really want to try to do is not to talk over each other. I know I'm the worst offender. I just know that my question is important and I got to get it in there before the speaker barely finishes their sentence. But let's try not to be like me. Let's let speakers stop speaking. And I would ask anybody that's given a report or an update or a lengthy answer, ask, are there any questions? And that way we'll know that's a good time to ask the question. One of the things I have done with the Zoom features is use the chat capability to send the moderator a question. And then the moderator could either recognize a person or could just say, hey, we have a question from Billy Bob and this is the question.
Tom, I'm gonna jump in there for a second on us for open meetings. I mm-hmm. think we want to discourage council members from using the chat box. That creates kind of issues. I know the Foundation for Open Government has discouraged the legislature from using the chat box.
Okay.
So if, Tom, you're needing to send a message to Audrey, that's perfectly fine. But I want to make sure that we as the council are not conducting any business through the chat box.
All right, good correction. So if you have some issue with the mechanics of the call, send Audrey a chat, and she'll try to help you through the chat feature to resolve your issue. Otherwise, let's do exactly what Greg said. And if we step on each other occasionally, we'll get it sorted out. I mean, everybody just needs to be patient.
We will definitely get sorted out. Kelly Burma is also available to provide technical assistance. You can call her or email her. And Kelly, you can also do the chat box feature too, can't you?
Yes, I can.
So we've got a couple of different options for anyone who's encountering any difficulty. We'll figure this out. We'll make it work.
Greg, did you want to take a break at some point during the meeting, or do you want people to respond to their own biologic needs, jump out, and jump back in?
I think that in terms of making sure we have a quorum, if somebody steps out who's a council member, they should let us know. Otherwise, I would encourage us just to proceed forward. I don't think this will be a terribly long meeting. If we at some point feel that a break is necessary, we can certainly go do that. I would not want any famous Supreme Court flushes taking place, so we just have to be mindful that we are on live.
Don't take your phone with you.
Don't take your, or your headset. I've got my headset on, so
okay,
that's wireless. That could be embarrassing, so I'll make a note to my, note to self. Yes, turn off headset.
Mute yourself.
Before, exactly. All right.
Okay, I think that probably covers kind of the administrative stuff. Greg, is there anything, or Kelly, is there anything else that we need to convey before we actually do the roll call? I'm sorry, I had one more thing. Greg, I think, reminded me that any votes that we take are going to be a roll call vote. So Katie, as a secretary, you would call the roll and each person would cast their A or nay vote. So if we get to that point, then let's remember that.
Tom, this is urgent. I just wanted to, the meeting is being recorded, correct?
Correct. So Audrey, thanks. You've got the record feature going?
Great. Yes, sir. We're good to go.
All right. So folks need to
called in also and is connecting.
Great. Great. We've got public participation is good. So Tom, I think we're ready.
All right. We called the meeting to order already. Katie, can you do the roll call?
Yes, sir. If you'll give me 1 minute to pull up the list. Okay. Chair Tom O'Brien.
Here.
Vice Chair Urja.
Here.
Executive Director Trapp.
I am here.
CAB Representative Bernadine Chavez.
Here.
Board or Council Member Paul. I don't know how to say your last name, Paul.
Let's roll here.
Council Member Lily Martinez.
Here.
Council Member Yolanda Montoya Cordova.
Here.
And myself, I'm here.
Thank you.
All right. And Katie, just when you take votes, if you just say the first and last name, that can make the votes go quicker.
Yes, sir.
Okay, Greg, do you want to introduce staff and guests?
I would be delighted to. So we do have quite a few staff people on board here. Making it work for us is Audrey Trujillo, who's hosting the meeting. Of course, we have Kelly Burma, who is our SRC liaison, also co-hosting. Jim Salas, you're on board.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And Deputy Director for ION VR, we have Trish Adams. Trish, you on board with us?
Be on mute.
Trish may be on mute. She was going to join
he
us.
Here.
All right.
I'm
very
here.
Good. Very
I'm
good.
Here.
All right. Kevin Romero, our Deputy Director for Finance Administration. Kevin, you there?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Kevin is with us. Very good. Lucy Alexander might be a little bit late, but Lucy, are you there?
She's in the waiting room. I'm about to take her out.
All right.
I'm about to let her in.
All right. Any other staff members that I neglected to introduce? All right. So, Mr. Chairman, I think that is it for staff. We'll wait till Lucy gets on board here. All right. And we want to make sure that we've got folks out of the wait room here. So, Audrey and Kelly, if you see anyone come into the wait room, let us know so that we can pause discussions to let people in.
Yes, sir. And Urja. Do you have a question? She raised her hand in the window.
No, I just hit the mute button wrong.
I
meant to mute myself. Sorry.
No problem.
All right. And now, Mr. Chair, time for guests. We may have a few guests here. We can have those individuals introduce themselves.
Kobe Livingstone from the Statewide Independent Living Council of New Mexico.
Welcome, Kobe.
Hi, Tom.
All right, any other guests who wish to introduce themselves?
Greg, this is Lucy, I am here.
Lucy, you made it, thank you so much.
Lucy, are you, I've got an icon that shows up with, oh, there it goes, it just converted your name, thank you. Okay, are there any members of the public that are on? Okay. So the next item on the agenda is the approval of the agenda. The agenda was distributed and everybody should have a chance to take a look at it. Is there a motion to approve the agenda as distributed?
This is Paul. I move the agenda approved as distributed.
Thank you, Paul. Is there a second?
It's Bernadine. I second.
Thank you, Bernadine. Any discussion? There being no discussion, let's go ahead and move the vote. All in favor of approving the agenda?
Roll call vote.
Oh, I'm sorry. Katie, can you do a roll call vote on approving the motion to approve the agenda?
Yes, sir. Give me one moment. Bernadine Chavez?
I vote yes.
Caitlin Ellis, I vote yes. Urja Lansing?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Lillian?
Yes.
Yolanda?
Yes.
Tom?
Yes.
And Greg?
Yes.
Okay, it passed.
That sounded unanimous to me. All right, so the agenda has been approved. Let's move forward. The next item 5 on the agenda is the approval of the minutes of the special meeting of December 16th, 2019. Those minutes were distributed in advance of the meeting. What we'll do is we'll do the motion, and then in discussion we can go over if there's anything else in the minutes that we need to correct or adjust. So is there a motion to approve the minutes of the December 16th, 2019 meeting as distributed?
Urja moves to approve the minutes of December, is it 16th, as approved, as distributed.
Urja has made the motion. Is there a second?
Paul, second.
Paul Luttrell has seconded the motion. Now, discussion. Are there any comments, questions, or changes that anybody saw in the minutes that are needed?
Mr. Chairman, this is Greg. If I can jump in here, this was an important meeting because we were approving the state plan. So we wanted to make sure that we captured all of that relevant discussion. That made the minutes a little bit longer. We sent out 2 different iterations of those. I sent out a draft on Saturday. Trish had a chance to look at it on Monday, found a couple very minor little typos, Trish, and I'd sent out a note to the council with that information, or Trish had actually, to the council. But Trish, do you want to review the 2 quick changes?
Give me a second, I'll pull up that email. It was mostly typos. I wasn't prepared. Oh, okay. Found it. So most of it was just changing the case of things, like pulled had a capital P. Social work in description of Katie's degree had a lowercase w on the work. AN was left out of Republican when talking about the budget. And when talking about executive order, the E in executive order was lowercase and I made it uppercase. That was it.
Okay. Is there any other discussion on the minutes? Let's go ahead and move forward with a roll call vote on the motion to approve the minutes as distributed.
Bernadine Chalice?
Yes.
Myself? Yes. Erja?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Lily?
Yes.
Yolanda?
Yes.
Tom?
Yes.
And Greg?
Yes.
That passed unanimously.
All right. Thank you, Katie. Next item on the agenda is the chair report, and I prepared some comments, and I'm just going to read them, and I can send these to you, Trish, if you want. Again, welcome to our first SRC meeting of 2020. Thanks to all of you for taking the time to participate in this meeting. We have a lot to do, so please try to stay with us until the very end of the meeting. I want to thank Kelly Berma for all of her help setting up this meeting. For the 6 years I've been on the SRC, Kelly's been dedicated and tireless in her attention to detail to help our meetings to be meaningful, beneficial, and professional. Thank you, Kelly, for all that you do for us and the blind and visually impaired in New Mexico. Thanks to Greg Trapp for his work in getting ready and getting me ready for this meeting. It's been profoundly rewarding to work with Greg over the past 6 years on the SRC. Greg is the epitome of a professional public servant dedicated to their job and the success of the organization he is charged with managing. We are in very strange times and have been since early March of this year. Our parents and grandparents lived through the Great Depression and World War II. We have all heard stories throughout our lives from them about the difficulties that both the Great Depression and World War II created both individually and in their local communities and across our nation. Now we're living through just as historic and unprecedented times with the coronavirus pandemic. Each of us have been personally impacted, whether through job losses and cutbacks, being restricted to our homes during the lockdown period, closing of schools, not being able to be with friends and loved ones and coworkers, and the list goes on. Telling our grandchildren about the shortage of toilet paper, disinfectant, pasta, meat, chicken, etc., will seem to them as impossibilities. But we have lived through all of these supply chain disruptions, some of which are still occurring. Through all of this, the Commission for the Blind has continued to function to serve the blind and visually impaired of New Mexico. Mr. Trapp and his leadership team have had to work long hours and be creative and innovative to keep the Commission effectively functioning. Some of the issues that we've dealt with have been especially hard on disabled and especially the blind. We are all coming out of the past few months stronger, smarter, and more self-sufficient. While we do not know what the future holds, we do know that working together, we can meet the challenges that are in front of us. This may be my last meeting as a chair and a member of the SRC since my second three-year term is completed at the end of September. In case we do not have another meeting before then, I want to express my appreciation for being able to serve on this SRC and for the confidence you have had in me by electing me as your chair for more than 5 years. I've enjoyed my tenure and passionately believe I have received far more and benefited far more by being part of this council than what I have contributed. Erja Lansing is also completing her second three-year term in September, and I want to thank her for her dedication that she has shown to this council and the blind community in New Mexico. I've learned a lot from her, and I appreciate the friendship that we have developed. Thank you all again for participating today, and now let's move to the next item on the agenda. The next item is the client assistance report. Bernadine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I echo your comments about the commission staff and their dedication. And I would also like to thank you for your leadership. It's been a true pleasure and an honor to serve on the council with you and with Erja. I have a brief report. I just did it for the last quarter. We had two consumers that called us about issues with the commission, things that we were able to resolve quickly so they didn't result in long-term cases. mostly I think it was just a lack of communication or understanding, and so we were able to resolve those quickly. One of the things I want to mention is that we are getting a lot of calls from DVR clients not getting return phone calls, and that certainly is not the case for the commission. So it truly seems like the commission has been very responsive during these difficult times. And so, I think that says a lot about the leadership of the commission. Mr. Chairman, that is my report.
Thank you, Bernadine. Greg, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Paula sent in a written report, and then we want Kobe to give us a report on the silk. Where did you want to slide those in?
We can do that now. I think this would be a good time at the start of the director's report. I had asked Trish to read Paula's report, so hopefully Trish has that ready. But as we proceed, Kobe, if you want to give your silk report, this would be a really good time. And we've got some noise in the background, so folks are not talking. They might want to mute their microphones. That'll help the sound quality be a little better.
Am I off mute?
You are.
Okay, thank you, Kelly. Greetings to everybody. I am still not reappointed as a member of the SRC, but Greg asked me to come and give a report today. We have a coordinator that's doing a fantastic job trying to learn what's needed as far as being a coordinator of the Statewide Independent Living Council Board, and learning about the various agencies around New Mexico. It's a work in progress. We're not fully constituted as a board. Those members that had expired appointments by the governor last December still are not reappointed. The governor's office has not been able to complete that task. We met last week in a quarterly meeting, a Zoom virtual meeting, and we had a quorum, and we voted to keep the bylaws for the Open Meeting Act the way it was written originally. It's my opinion that it's going to be revisited with all the work that Greg has done with the Open Meetings Act and special meetings, emergency meetings, and so that they're all in compliance with the Open Meetings Act. The independent living centers, there are five choices in Roswell, the Ability Center in Las Cruces, New Vistas in Santa Fe, the San Juan Independent Living Center in Farmington, and the Independent Living Resources Center here in Albuquerque, gave reports. They were all present. And also Paula Sinez and Rebecca Holland from the Native American programs. And Petra Solomon was there too. The Native American independent living programs are having the most difficulty, in my opinion. They, they're locked down. They're having food shortages. They're having difficulty getting to their clients because of all of the rural aspect and not having up-to-date, fast, or any internet at all, even a plain phone. It was sad to hear their report. Albert Montoya is the executive director in Las Cruces. Fantastic. program there. He is doing some innovative things and really has adapted and accommodated to this virtual stuff and having folks being locked down and getting to them anyway with his staff and all kinds of technology. He's a technology expert. And
Kobe, this is Greg. I'm curious about the status of the spill. Can you tell us what's going on with the state plan for independent living? Did that get approved?
Well, last I knew, Greg, they were waiting for your report of the objectives and goals that would be updated, right?
Kobe, I've been sent copies of the spill, but no one has asked me for any part of that, but we will certainly get that to them if they need anything
us. Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that, Greg. I've been asking them to contact you. Okay. All right. It's due June 30th. It's a brand new format, very detailed. Many, many things to learn to complete this document. And we were given the new document in April. We're so frustrated with the darn thing. But we expect to have it sent back to the council, Greg, by June 25th with all the corrections and additions. It'll be approved and it will be submitted by June 30th. And if it gets kicked back, it gets kicked back because we did our very best. There was no opportunity, no way would they allow it to be, you know, a due date being extended. So we did the best we could. Any other questions, Greg?
No, I just want to make sure that this bill got addressed, and I'll certainly go back and look. I did get copies of the spill. There was just not a cover note to me. I will go in and make sure I get to update our information. So Jim and I will get that to you here. We'll try to get it to you tomorrow or early Thursday.
Okay.
So Kobe, I appreciate that. And I'm really glad that you're able to join us here.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Thank you, Kobe. Trish, do you have Paula's report that you could read?
I do. Let me switch screens here. Okay, can everybody hear me?
Yes.
AI VRS updates, New Mexico Commission for the Blind, SRC meeting 6, she has 24, but I assume she means 23, 2020. On March 16, 2020, the Navajo Nation Office of the President/Vice President issued an executive order for closure of all offices due to COVID-19. The Navajo OSERS program has been telecommuting from home, conducting wellness checks on consumers, and continuing to provide services. There have been challenges with telecommuting due to lack of internet connectivity. Recovery plans are being developed for return to offices on July 6, 2020. The Pueblo of Jemez and Pueblos of Acoma and Laguna remain closed to the general public. Staff at Jemez returned to work on June 8, 2020. Jemez VR serves consumers within an 80-mile radius and 8 Pueblo communities. With Pueblo communities remaining closed, services have been halted. Many consumers with self-employment plans are unable to implement their business due to COVID-19. The Jemez VR director has been working with the state DVR transition coordinator to continue to implement Project Hope for Youth by July 1st, 2020. The Laguna Acoma Connections VR project director, Petra Solomon, worked on and successfully submitted the Laguna Acoma Connections grant which was originally due on May 26, 2020. She submitted the VR grant prior to this original submission deadline. The U.S. Department of Education, RSA, released a request for proposals for the American Indian Vocational Rehabilitation Discretionary Grant Program with the May 26, 2020 submission date. With many tribal communities being closed due to COVID-19, CANAR advocated to federal RSA to extend the deadline for grant submission. Federal RSA eventually released an extension to Friday, June 26, 2020. Many tribes face challenges in preparing a competitive application due to not being able to enter their offices, access data, and obtain tribal council resolutions. August Martin is assigned as the grants manager for this competition. Two additional AIVRS assigned project officers resigned from the U.S. Department of Education RSA. Sonia Turner announced her retirement and Jessica Lugg resigned from the program in April 2020. Corrine Wendenthal has been assigned as project officer to several AIVRS programs to fill the vacancies. CANAR canceled its mid-year conference, which was to be held on June 15 through 18, 2020, and will assess whether an annual conference will be held. The American Indian Vocational Rehabilitation Technical Assistance and Training Center, AIVRTTAC, at Northern Arizona University has held a series of webinars for professional development for AIVRS staff. The directors for Navajo and Haimas VR facilitated webinars, including one on emergency preparedness. The Northwest Indian College continues to offer courses for AIVRS staff. The request for proposals for the technical assistance centers has not been issued by U.S. Department of Education, RSA. The two funded TA centers will end on September 30, 2020. And that's it.
Thank you, Trish. Clearly, the Native American programs are facing significant difficulties. And I mean, almost every day I read about the number of positive COVID cases on the Navajo tribe, and it's just a very, very sad thing to read about, and it's sad to hear about the situations that Paula described in her report. So let's hope that we can get past many of these issues and the programs can get back in gear. There's a lot of people that need their help. So Greg, do you want to go ahead and start your director's report?
I do, and Mr. Chairman, we will be as brief as we possibly can. So there are some critical things we need to discuss, but I will ask myself and my staff to give shorter reports if we can, just because of the nature of this Zoom meeting. Obviously, Mr. Chairman, as you said, the coronavirus has changed everything. We have been also directly impacted by it. Brian Miller, who was our former liaison with the Rehabilitation Services Administration, died from the coronavirus. There's a very nice article about him in the Washington Post. That was very, very sad. Lucy Malahan, who is on the phone call with us, her brother-in-law has passed away as a result of COVID-19. So Lucy, we extend to you our condolences. We also lost a business enterprise program contractor, not a licensed manager, but we've been impacted very, very directly by the virus here. And of course, the impact on our budget is significant. Kevin will talk more about that, but the special session just ended. We're going to get a 4% cut to our budget. That still leaves us with a net increase coming out from the regular session the short session. I have to remember we've got too many sessions going on here that took place in January and February. So Kevin will talk more about that. We are really concerned about the collapse of oil prices, what that has done to the state budget. I think we can expect to see additional cuts in the long session that will start in January of 2021. I don't expect that we'll see a huge rebound. We've been fortunate that we do have a significant permanent reserve that's enabled the state to mitigate the impact of some of those cuts. We'll talk more about some of the fiscal issues later, including when we're discussing the waivers that are proposed by the U.S. Department of Education. Kobe mentioned that she'd not yet been appointed to the council. We are working with the governor's office. Obviously, the governor is extremely focused on making sure that the state is doing what it needs to do with respect to the coronavirus. I understand that. We have communicated with Melissa Salazar. I will do that again here to follow up. We definitely need additional appointments. We have a list of several individuals who we have recommended, and we will keep working with the governor's office to get those individuals appointed. I want to mention briefly the issue of hearing officers. As you know, the Rehab Council identifies the hearing officers. We have an agreement with the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation to share a pool of hearing officers. DVR is going to extend its contract with the hearing officers another year. We will continue to work with DVR to make sure that we do have a qualified pool of hearing officers. I'm pleased that they're able to extend that contract. This will be the last extension that will be available. DVR will have to go through a new RFA process in order to get a new pool of hearing officers. I think in the meantime, we should also be working jointly and will be working jointly to make sure that we're providing training to the hearing officers. Also, we want to make sure that we're able to recruit additional hearing officers. We have had a hiring freeze that took place on April 22nd. We have been able to get some exemptions to the hiring freeze. I'm sure that Kevin and Jim will talk more about that. We have other exemption requests pending. Exemptions were available for entities that received federal funding, which we do. We also have a statutorily required level of service that we have to provide. So we really did need to have those positions filled. So I was able to get that, and Kevin, I appreciate your work with that. So at that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go ahead and turn it over to Kevin for an administration finance report. So Kevin.
Hello, members of the council. In regards to finance administration, as Greg had stated, the special session has just ended. House Bill 1 was passed the House and the Senate. In regards to the Commission for the Blind, it involves a 4% reduction in general fund allotment for fiscal year 21 starting next week. Roughly calculated, that's a $96,000 reduction in our base budget. Also included within the package for solvency was significant reduction in the compensation portion of the House original House Bill 2. The specific language impacts the agency at the operational level, as the language currently states that the compensation increase is to be funded from operating budgets first. And if an agency cannot fund that compensation increase, they have to request from DFA funds from a special appropriation. Is there any questions in regards to the current general appropriation sanding that just passed the legislature? Okay, not seen any. Moving on to human resources. Human resources, as Greg has illustrated or has spoken, we did request hiring exemptions from the State Personnel Office and DFA to fill critical positions. We have received approval for 5 positions to date. All 5 are advertised. One of them closed last week. We do have another 4 in submission to state personnel for filling vocational rehab council positions, a couple of admin positions, and I believe there's an assistive technology position, I believe. So we are working to hire these positions as quickly and as effectively as we can. But that being said, we are, or I'm calculating currently what the impact is on the standing portion in regards to filling these positions, and I'm working to get numbers as quickly as possible. Are there any questions? Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to also really thank Katie Ellis for her help during the legislative session. That was really, really key. We did have our House Appropriations and Finance Committee hearing on January 14. I thought that went well, but the recommendation that came out of that was only for an $87,500 increase. That just wasn't enough, and we were able to actually get the governor's recommendation or the executive recommendation, which was a $300,000 increase. We ended up with a $312,500 increase, so we will still be a little bit ahead of where we were had we not been able to advocate for additional revenue. So Katie, thank you. Also want to thank Kelly Burma for her help in helping to make sure that we could get in touch with all of the senators and representatives. Kelly and I, Art Schreiber, Chairman Schreiber, went up many, many times to the roundhouse. We were able to communicate the needs of the agency. Kelly even sang the national anthem before the Senate one day. So I think that was good for at least $100,000 on our budget. So Kelly, you did a great job with that. As Kevin said, we've been really, really busy. Kevin, especially getting our operating budget in. It's been a crazy week. So Kevin, I appreciate all of your work and efforts in Santa Fe. So thank you to your team up there. Kevin has been coming into the office. He was there by himself for the whole time since middle of March. And we've just now introduced a rotational system in Santa Fe. So Kevin can do a little bit of teleworking. So Kevin, thank you for all your work. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Greg.
All right. So Jim, I want you to give us a report on IL and VR.
All right. Good afternoon, folks. So Kevin, again, talked about some of our vacancy situations. He mentioned some of the positions that have been submitted for an exemption from the hiring freeze. Again, those would be our Farmington VR counselor, our CRUSIS assistive technology specialist, and 2 admin support positions in the Albuquerque office. And a couple of other positions that are currently being recruited. One is the VR counselor in Vegas, and the other is the VR counselor in Roswell. And so Denise, who has been in our Roswell office, is moving to Albuquerque to take one of the vacant positions in Albuquerque. And so that'll be happening in another month or so. So we do have, again, some staffing issues, which has kind of been the bane of our existence for a few years now. We seem to get them filled and then we lose candidates. So that's been very frustrating. So we're trying to find some good stable folks that want to stick around for a while. And that's kind of what we're really, really hoping for. On the independent living side, as far as staffing is concerned, again, Juan Haro was selected back in January for the supervisor over the independent living program. He, again, currently is in our Roswell office, but he's going to be moving to Albuquerque, again, the latter part of July, first part of August. He's been doing the job from Roswell, but the official duty station is Albuquerque, so he'll be moving to Albuquerque here again, another month or so. Let's see, we'll be talking about STEP here later in the agenda. As far as our employment numbers for state fiscal year to date, we're getting close to the end of the year. And so there's usually some activity now as counselors submit closures, you know, at the end of the quarter and end of the state fiscal year. As of right this moment, we have 14 and for an average wage of $18.15 an hour. And on the federal fiscal year, again, which ends at the end of September, we have 7 total as of this moment, year to date, with an average wage of $18.42 an hour. Again, I know Daphne was meeting with her counselor team today, and she was going to be asking them for some projections on additional closures for the state fiscal year and additional closures projected for the federal fiscal year. We have 33 folks in employment status, and again, she was going to be following up with them regarding whether those are still valid folks that are still in employment status, whether the COVID coronavirus stay-at-home kind of situations, a lot of employers laying off staff, furloughing staff, has had any impact on those folks that are in employment status. So I don't have those absolute current numbers as of this moment. So that, Mr. Chairman, that's my report. I'd be happy to take questions.
No questions for Jim? Mm. Doesn't sound like it here.
No.
All right. Mr. Chairman, I should also mention when we had our House Appropriations and Finance Committee hearing that, Mr. Chairman, you were there, as was Urja Lansing, as was Katie Ellis, as was Art Schreiber. I always like to capture that in the minutes of our meetings. So I really appreciate that support. I think that that's really critical that we can show that we have consumer reports, consumer support. So no other questions for Jim? No hands are raised?
No, sir.
All right. So Lucy, welcome. You want to give us a center report?
All right. Thank you so much. Glad to be here with you today. Chairman, I am sorry to hear this might be your last meeting, as I'm sorry to hear that this might be Urja's last meeting as well. So y'all have done a great job, and the center has always appreciated your support. Thank you. As others have mentioned, we began telemarketing on March the 17th of this year. By Monday afternoon, March the 16th, all of our students had returned to their homes. We did have 8 students continue with us in virtual training sessions, and all of our staff began teleworking, with the exception of the dorm staff. 3 dorm staff worked intermittent schedules, but they've now transitioned to fully teleworking. We do have our maintenance worker who continues to maintain the buildings and oversee projects that we have going on at the center. So he is the only person that is at the center in person. We were also able to expand our services a little bit once we transitioned to a telework model and virtual learning. So we were able to provide some services to a person whose case is pre-ex eligible, and then a person who had been scheduled for a tour in December but wasn't able to make that tour and ultimately decided that the orientation center wasn't the best choice at the time. So we were able to provide that additional training. And so we've thought to find ways to provide training as needs have changed. We've sought to keep up with those. Since July 1st of 2019, we've had 8 students graduate from the Orientation Center, including 3 who have graduated since we've been teleworking. We have had 2 staff complete staff immersion training, and no grievances have been filed during the fiscal year 2020. Doug Goodhart our blind and skills instructor for the area of assistive tech, for industrial arts, retired at the end of February. So I'd like to thank Doug for his many years of service. I believe he was with us for 17 years. And there will be no one like Doug to fill his role. With Doug's retirement, we have two vacancies at the center. One is in the blind and skilled instructor position that Doug had filled, and then also our secretary position is vacant. So we've had some construction go on since we last met. The replacement of the roof on the older section of the dormitory has been completed, as well as installation of a new air conditioning and heating unit was installed on the roof. And I'm really excited to report that our building has finally been restuccoed. So that project is complete. It looks almost like a brand new building, but I haven't been to the building since the project was completed. So I'm looking forward to one day being able to go back into a very pretty building now. Mr. Chairman, that's my report.
Any questions for Lucy? And Tom, you're still with us?
I actually have a question for Lucy. What's your plan, or how are you planning for the fall?
That is an excellent question, and one that I wish I could provide definite answers for. I've participated in many meetings with other center directors around the country, and a lot of them have begun to reopen, and several will not reopen until August, mainly after youth programs are complete. We are participating in STEP as well. And so STEP is virtual this year, and so our staff is providing support to 29 participants who are participating in STEP. So I have begun putting together a reopening plan, and of course we're watching how the spread of COVID-19 has impacted our state. And we will, of course, be guided by the governor's orders regarding reopening of a residential facility. But providing in-person blindness skills training is vital. We have learned, quite sadly, from others' experiences that not being able to provide in-person training can be detrimental and quite unsafe. So we do still value in-person training, and we want to get back to providing that in-person training in the safest way possible. We've procured some masks, and like I said, we're looking at a reopening plan and what that looks like. I hope to learn too from our sister centers around the country who may be taking these steps into uncharted territory before us.
Thank you, Lucy.
Welcome.
All right, so unless there are any questions for Lucy, we'll hear from Kelly. Kelly, give us a brief Skills Center report, if you would.
So good afternoon, everyone. I'm happy to be here representing the Skills Center and to be your liaison. So along with the rest of the agency, including the orientation center, we went to a telework model for all of our staff on March 17th, we have been providing mostly pre-et services and services to a few adults that we to consumers that we had already been serving in that time. So, but we did have to decide that two of our consumers, they were either uncomfortable or it was noted that they would not benefit from remote learning because of the nature of their disability. So they're currently not being served. I would like to be able to innovate a way to get that back, because as Lucy stated, we don't know when things are going to reopen. And of course, the Skills Center is part of is joined to the larger office in Albuquerque. So that makes things quite a bit different for us. We are, of course, participating in STEP. My instructors have about six, it has been about an average of about 6 or 8 students, depending on the class or nature of the class, or actually really 9 students that they're serving in home management, which we are doing by video conference, and we're doing that for safety. We've demanded that as much as we can in order to make sure that everybody that we're watching hand-over-hand technique, those demonstrations being provided to parents, and that everybody, as the students' coaches, and that everybody is staying safe as best we can. We are providing as well Braille-assisted technology and personal management. And one thing that we can talk about later with the chairs and the executive director, as we talk further about our coronavirus response, is we are providing virtual and very strictly wellness checked in-person one-on-one services called the Mask to Mask Lesson. So the Orientation Center is participating in that as well. We are continuing our Technology for Children program along with and thank Jim and his drivers in the technology unit for helping us with that. We're doing that by way of non-contact drop-off deliveries to families who let us know that they're going to be available to receive equipment, and we are able to ship some things and make sure that we're tracking that packages are getting to where they need to be by way of tracking shipping. So that is pretty much my report.
And Mr. Chairman, I'll add one little thing real quick. Part of our emphasis through the Technology for Children program is to make sure that children do have the assistive technology that they need to participate remotely in their school program. That's really a key focus for us right now. We did get the additional Department of Health $80,000 appropriation. We've not yet received that for next fiscal year, but we will be submitting the paperwork to accomplish that. So, Kelly, I really appreciate your report there. So, Mr. Chairman, that is the director's report. I just really want to thank the council for all of your work. We're obviously not done yet for those who are not familiar with what's left on the agenda, but I really want to express my appreciation, Tom, for your being here, Urja, Katie, Lila May, Paul, Yolanda. It's really great to have Bernadine. Can't leave out Bernadine. I really do hope that we can get some additional appointments. And I really think we should have at least one other meeting before our September 30th time period when some people might have their terms expiring, just to be safe. So we really do need to work with that. And I just appreciate everyone for joining us. Lila May down there in Las Cruces, thank you very much. I think you're the furthest one away today, so thank you for joining us. We will be able to get per diem, even though this is a virtual meeting. The Department of Finance Administration has said that they will allow for per diem. The requirement used to be that per diem was not eligible for anyone who was participating from their home. So for Paul Luttrell and Lila May and Bernadine and Yolanda and Katie and Tom, all of you are eligible for per diem. So I think that's great. So, Mr. Chairman, we can move on to unfinished business now.
Greg, I want to thank you and Kevin and anybody else involved in getting that through. We all appreciate it. I had a question, and if this isn't the place to ask it, then tell me when is. I know that Kelly had been involved, very heavily involved in participating in IEPs around the state, and maybe other counselors as well with students. So since the shutdown of the schools in March, are any IEPs being done? Are they being done virtually, or is that just kind of shut down?
If I may, and Jim can speak to this too, but I know that I did actually participate in about 3 IEPs since the shutdown of the school. Most of our students had their IEPs done before school shut down that week of March, the 16th. But there were a few here and there that counselors attended as well as I, or both of us might have attended. And we've even been able to attend some for potentially eligible consumers as well. So we're able to maintain the relationship with the school district. And we're able to ask, we're able to ask those questions about how they, and of course, one of the things I think that needs to be stated here is that the schools are not sure how, they're still coming up with their reopening plans for the fall. And so the IEP services, they still have to provide them. And now it's the question of the mechanism in which they will be provided. And so in my observation, a lot of schools have, they know that they have to provide the service. Some may have gotten watered down a bit. We want to be sure to track that. I haven't really, and we did notice that some students, one of the things that we probably need to track too is that we're noticing that some students really did not benefit from or not benefiting from the online learning. And they may need to be retained a grade. They may need to be, there's not going to be compensatory education. So there are things that we're going to need to deal with.
So,
Mr. Chair, this is Bernadine. We've been working on these issues, and so on our website we have a series of tip sheets for families about their rights while doing distance learning. And so if you have anyone who has any concerns, they can call us or they can go to our website and look at those tip sheets.
And also as well, this is my DRNM hat going on. We have created a resource list. The education team at DRNM has created a resource list for COVID-19 issues that will be going up as well. That just got finalized by the team today and is going to management at some point by the end of this week.
Thank you all. And we heard in Paula's report about problems with technology, even basic phone technology, much less the broadband internet. And I was just wondering, the whole shutdown happened pretty fast, and whether we have blind and visually impaired students that did they get their technology and is it working, and or is that put an additional burden on the commission to try to help resolve some of those issues if the school systems around the state can't deal with it? It's kind of a general question for Kelly and Greg in terms of the technology issues around the entire state.
So, Mr. Chairman, this is Jim Salas. And I wanted to provide a little feedback on that question that you had. And you're 100% right. As the schools all went to remote learning platforms, we took up an initiative with the commission to check on all of our high school students and all of our college students now to make sure that they had, number one, that they had a piece of hardware that they could use, that they had the kind of software that was necessary to be able to access the learning management system that their school system was using, and also that they had the internet access. Now, most of their college students have that type of gear already, and so I don't think we really had much in terms of needs for those college students, but many of the high school students did not. And now some high schools, some districts distributed hardware like Chromebooks, and Chromebooks actually have assistive technology built in. So it was just a matter of showing the students how to access the assistive technology, screen reader, screen magnification technology that was already built into the Chromebook. But for other students who had Windows-based computers, if they needed Fusion, again, JAWS and Zoom Text, or either of those assistive technology tools, then we were able to identify those students and purchase the necessary hardware, purchase the necessary assistive technology. And then when it came to internet service, again, some families had adequate broadband service already in place, and in some cases they did not. And so we utilized tools like Comcast Essentials, which was an initiative by Comcast to make broadband available for a very, very reasonable price. I think it was $10 basically a month. And if that was available and could be set up within a reasonable period of time, then we utilized that. If not, then we utilized other options, maybe updating or expanding the personal hotspot, a service that maybe the family had on a cell phone, or maybe the consumer themselves had a cell phone, smartphone, and we were able to utilize the data, expand their own data plan to provide them enough data so that they could access, again, their school remote learning management system. So we did really work on that. In some cases, it was a little more challenging, as you would imagine, than in other cases, but we really worked really quickly to try to identify those students and try to make sure they had the tools that they needed to access the learning management systems. Now, it really dovetailed into STEP because some of that same kind of technology was needed. They needed hardware, they needed assistive technology, and they needed internet. And in cases of a high school student who was a senior who was graduating this past May, say they had been issued a Chromebook, well, the school district was going to retrieve that, and their leverage was that if the student didn't give back the Chromebook, then the school district wasn't going to give them a diploma. So that was a pretty effective lever to get the hardware back. But again, we would have stepped in and provided a computer for that student, again, to dovetail into STEP. But for, say, freshmen, sophomores, juniors in high schools that did issue Chromebooks, then typically those school systems were going to allow the student to hold on to that hardware through the summer with the likelihood that they would be needing that hardware come the fall. So we didn't have to worry about hardware in those situations. So the basic answer to your question, Mr. Chairman, is certainly yes. We did have to address those kinds of technology needs for our high school students in particular, not quite as much for their college students.
Jim, I really appreciate the detailed answer. Kind of glad you guys can't see me because literally I have tears in my eyes thinking about how you guys stepped in proactively and just took on a huge workload to make sure that the blind students weren't left behind in any because of any technology issues, whatever they may be, including, like say, getting expanded internet to their family or whatever. So I just think you guys, thank you. I mean, and thank you for letting us know what you did.
And Mr. Chairman, kind of like usual with the commission, everybody plays a role. You know, the counselors played a role, the teachers played a role, the techs played a role, Kelly's team played a role, Lucy's team played a role, and so we all, contributed and to try to make it happen.
Thank you. And absolutely, the commission works as a well-oiled machine. Okay, Greg, was there anything else in your report or any follow-up?
No, Mr. Chairman, I think we're ready to move on to our unfinished business.
Okay, item 9 on the agenda is unfinished business, and there's two items under unfinished business. We'll start with item A, report on the submission of the combined state plan, and that's Greg and Jim.
And Mr. Chairman, I hope that Yolanda will also feel free to jump in here as well, because she certainly obviously has a great role here as a Deputy Secretary for Workforce Solutions. This has been a really, really interesting state plan process, different from anything that we've done before. I'll have Jim talk a little bit about kind of our last rushed day and a half here. But as the council will remember on our meeting on the 16th of December, we had approved the state plan components that the council is responsible for, the goals and priorities, the input from the council. And we were having an ongoing public comment process, and we're continuing to develop the state plan. The commission had some additional public meetings in addition to those that we reported on for the 16th. Those were all designed to dovetail with the public comment period that was made available for the entire state plan. On the 6th of February, the State Workforce Development Board had a meeting in Albuquerque, and Chairman O'Brien, you were at that meeting, and Bernadine Chavez, you were there as well, as was Chairman Art Schreiber. During that meeting, the State Workforce Board approved the combined state plan. I made the motion for that approval. That motion was very carefully worded to make sure that the ongoing public comments could be considered, that there was a mechanism for incorporating those into the state plan as necessary, and if necessary, even to have the State Workforce Development Board come back on the 28th of February to have an additional meeting, should that have been necessary based upon the state plan comment period. That was also why the council was holding the 28th of February as well, just in case there was some comment or something that developed out of that town forum process that required us to make a significant revision to the state plan. We did have public meetings. We had one in Las Cruces on February 12. We had one in Albuquerque on February 20. We had one in Santa Fe on February 24. We had one in Farmington on March 5. Those public meetings are all required anytime the vocational rehabilitation program is making changes to policies or procedures. We'll be revisiting our Open Meetings Act, and we can talk more about that at that time. We did not have any comments come out of any of those public hearings that resulted in any change anything in our state plan. So just making sure, however, that we provided the public with that opportunity to provide comment. Jim, why don't you pick up here as far as some of the details and some of our last minute rushing there.
All right, thank you, sir. So we did submit our state plan to the Department of Workforce Solutions in early March to meet the mid-March deadline. And we appreciated that John Casado, who's a member of Yolanda's team with Department of Workforce Solutions, input all of our plan into the portal. That was really a lot of work that we have been accustomed to doing over the years ourselves, and we really appreciate that John made that input for us. I'm telling you, it was quite a lot of work. We then did meet as a state, that is the Department of Division of Vocational Rehabilitation, the Commission for the Blind, met with our RSA liaisons in mid-April to discuss the negotiated targets for the measurable skill gain performance measure. That's the only one of the six measures that is actually being tracked and monitored and measured for this program year 20, which starts now on July the 1st, and program year 21, which starts July 1st of next year. So this this performance measure is not an agency measure. So it's not a DVR measure or a commission measure. It's a state measure. So we had to work together with DVR and again with the kind of facilitation of the RSA representatives to come up with some target percentages that we felt we could live with. Our numbers tended to be a little higher as far as previous years, 17 and 18 data. DVRs tended to be a little bit lower, but so we were worked together to come up with some particular numbers. And so for the record, so we have kind of two types of numbers, expected levels and then negotiated levels. For 21, the expected level is 19% and the negotiated level is 24%. Again, this is a measurable skill gain. And for program year 21, the expected level is 20% and the negotiated level is 25%. And again, these ultimately kind of get measured as a state. They get rolled up into the measures for all the other partner agencies and kind of measured again as a, as an entire state. So that's a little bit, that's a little bit down the road. But so that was again in mid-April. Latter part of May, we had a request from RSA for to update one of the particular sections of the plan. And as Greg said, on June the 8th, we had a request from RSA to update, a number of items. I think it was maybe 12 different items. Now, we're accustomed to that. Again, we've gone through this process a number of times over the years, but usually this happens maybe a month or so after submission, and we usually get a week or 2 weeks to drill in there and work on the updates and the revisions and get them re-entered into the portal. But in this particular case, on June the 8th, we were not only talking about the 11th hour, we were talking about 11:45. And so they really wanted the information that day by close of business that day, Monday, June the 8th. Greg was able to negotiate an extension till noon the following day.
obviously, I'm not a very good negotiator.
Well, because they said their drop dead date was Wednesday the 10th, and that had to go through two or three other levels, you know, at RSA. So we were able to get it basically done by the noon on the 9th. But then, of course, we got it input, and again with John Casado's help, he's the big submitter, so he's able to push a couple of other buttons to change the status to federal review. And then, of course, they found one other little detail item, which honestly had been in there for probably 10 years. It just is an issue that a different person saw it and decided it needed to be changed. So it was a very minor little technical item, a couple of letters here and there on two lines. And so we had to get in there again at 11:59 now and make those changes. Again, John helped us to push them to RSA for final review. And I think we got the green light the following day that our plan had been approved, you know, at RSA. So yeah, other than that little bit of excitement right at the very last minute, I think we're in good shape.
That was quite a last minute rush. Jim and myself, Sarah coming in to help enter in that information. Sarah V. Vicencio, really appreciate that.
Right.
It was not an easy thing for us to do. DVR had been given about a week longer to get their plan materials in. So I'm not, they're incredibly apologetic. That didn't give me any more sleep that evening, but we do certainly appreciate our partnership with RSA. So Yolanda, I had said, I think deputy director, I should have said deputy secretary. Is there anything about the state plan process that you want to add for us here?
No, I will add that it was a little bit complicated. I think the pandemic also just sort of created more time at the federal level to actually dive into the state plan.
Yes, please.
So we found it a very similar process in our review as well. They were going through each section with a fine-tooth comb, and we'd end up having to make these small revisions that probably had been part of language that had been part of the state plan for the last at least 8 years. So there was a lot of cleaning up that happened on our end as well, because there was definitely some, they wanted greater clarity on how outreach was going to be done, for example, with veterans and the specific, you know, activities around that. And it was really interesting because we would say, when we would say things like includes all individuals, that wasn't good enough for them. We had to spell out who all the individuals were. So we had to go back and add words. It was just crazy. It was silly. But the good news is we have a state plan. And now the hard work begins, because we actually have to collaborate and actually do work together. So I'm looking forward to that part. I had a quick question, if I may, for Jim. You were talking about your performance metrics, and when you said that it's your measurable skills gain, 19, I heard the percentages. So that's a percentage for an annual gain, or was it what's that skill gain? How is it measured?
So it's basically a percentage of the number of folks that are enrolled in an education program that makes some type of a gain during that program year.
If it's a
high school student, they advance from 9th grade to 10th grade, 10th grade to 11th grade. If they're a college student, they acquire at least 12 semester hours, mm-hmm. toward their degree. If they're in an apprenticeship program or some type of program like that, they make, particular progress to a particular milestone, within that program.
So, but the 19 or the 20% or whatever that percentage is, just the total percentage of individuals on your caseload, or that were in a program?
Not just on the caseload, but enrolled in some type of an educational program. So it could be high school, could be college.
Okay.
Yeah, it could be a specific training program. So it's again, they have to be enrolled in a specific program. So that becomes the denominator. And then the folks that achieve a particular milepost becomes the numerator. And so that's where you get the, say 19% would be 19 out of 100 folks that are in a program, 19 had a,
sure.
Reached a milepost in the program.
Okay. I was just curious about if it was an annual measure. So thank you.
Yep, sure.
And Yolanda, it's really a very complex metric. Our performance at the Commission for the Blind was actually 28%. So had we been negotiating just as ourselves, RSA would have wanted us to have had a 33% measurable skills gain. They were asking, and they pushed us in that direction a little bit too. But they were wanting a 5% increase with measurable skills gain. Nationally, the average was 25%. The DVR numbers were a little below that. So because DVR is so much larger, their numbers kind of influenced how we ended up negotiating. So we really based it off of their numbers, and that's how we came up with the negotiated level. But the negotiated level is very much in the center of what is the place nationally.
Okay, thank you. And yours is combined with DVR, so.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Yeah. So, Mr. Chairman, unless there are any questions on the state plan, I do, again, Yolanda, want to echo what Jim said. We really appreciate John Casados and his assistance there. I found the state portal very difficult to use, and mm-hmm. John was able to help us in that process. So we really appreciated his help there.
He definitely became the highway operator, I'll tell you that, because he had to enter everyone's plans into the portal. So it's probably a task that we'll be doing as we move along, but he's become very familiar with that portal, and it was just easier for us to be the folks that got it into that system, since he seemed to be the one that understood it the best, and I think it worked out really well for all the partners.
Yeah, it worked out great for us. We appreciate him.
Okay, so let's go ahead and move forward to the second item under unfinished business, item 9B, the status of Section 107 monitoring. Mr. Kraut.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very, very much. So this is, in my view, an important item for us. The Section 107 monitoring is very, very rigorous. It is a year-long process. It's something that RSA has really tried to make shorter through what they're now calling focused monitoring. So they've revised their monitoring procedure. The focused monitoring is, in my view, not terribly focused. They have confine some of the parameters that they're looking at, but it's still a very sweeping monitoring process. Right now, they have put it on hold because of the coronavirus. Just before we got the lockdowns that took place in the middle of March, RSA had been scheduled to come out to monitor DVR. They ended up canceling that monitoring visit. My understanding is that that monitoring will now take place sometime this fall. Prior to the focused monitoring, RSA would monitor an entire state. So this is a very different process where they are just monitoring a single agency. They would have previously monitored DVR, the Commission for the Blind, and the Client Assistance Program, but that's not what they're doing. So they've got, I believe, six or seven agencies that they're looking at across the country that are currently in monitoring. I'm sure that things are going to get slowed down significantly because of the monitoring process. I had hoped to bring into New Mexico our federal fiscal consultant to do a training, also to do what we've been calling a mock or practice monitoring review, where he uses the monitoring instrument, actually adopts the kind of focus and perspective that RSA has with their monitoring. When we've done that in the past, we've come out well, but we've still been able to identify areas where we could improve or correct. So I hope to do that again with Seymour, even if we have to do it virtually. I think that's a very, very valuable process. So there are some calls to postpone the monitoring nationally because of the coronavirus. I doubt that RSA will do that, but we'll have to see if they do respond to those requests to stop the monitoring. So, Mr. Chair, that's the monitoring report. But Kevin, I don't know if you have anything you want to add to that, or Jim. Doesn't sound like it. So, Mr. Chairman, unless there are any questions of me, we're ready to move on to new business.
Thank you, Greg. Item 10 on the agenda is new business, and there's a number of items under there. The first one is item A, the approval of the Open Meetings Act resolution, revising to include provisions for meetings held during times of state emergencies. Greg sent the Open Meetings Act out to everybody. Hopefully you had a chance to read through it and you saw what was being added. Greg, do you want to discuss that a bit?
I think we should. I think there are some really important details here with that. I had asked Kelly to be ready to read that. Kelly, your connection's a little bit choppy, but hopefully it'll be okay. If it's not, I'll have Trish read it. So Trish, if you could also get ready to read paragraphs 13 and 14 if Kelly's connection continues to be a little choppy.
Greg, it's so, not my...
Oh, okay, now you're clear.
Oh, well, I'm changing the headphones.
Ah, okay.
I understand. I do apologize. This is not something we can always control.
No, it's definitely not. This is we're making the best of this. So Kelly, I appreciate that, and you've got your headphones. So
I'm changing them right now. If you would prefer Trish to read it in the interest of
time. No. Go ahead and change your microphone. We've got plenty of time. So Mr. Chair, the Open Meetings Resolution is doing a couple of things here. We are on the cutting edge here of making sure that we are responding to this new normal with the coronavirus. The purpose of the Open Meetings Resolution is to establish the kind of notice that we provide, and we do that here, but we also describe how we conduct meetings. Originally, the Open Meetings Act would have prohibited what we're doing today, that is to have a virtual meeting. 6 months ago, the Attorney General's office would have said that virtual meetings or meetings over the web were not allowed under the Open Meetings Act. But given the reality of that, they have allowed for this kind of thing to happen. I had actually emailed John Kreienkamp, our Assistant Attorney General, on March 2nd, saying that we were likely going to have to do something different here. At the time, none of us had any idea that the lockdown would be so long. I was concerned that we'd be able to conduct business in April and June that was essential for approving operating budgets and year-end contracts and things like that. But obviously, we're going to have to do this for a while longer. So our Open Meetings Act resolution has expanded the public meeting notice area, which is the kinds of meetings that we conduct as an agency under our federal regulations, under 34361.20B2. We have to establish procedures for how we conduct public meetings if there are no state laws on public meetings. So when I say public meetings, I'm not talking about this council. I'm talking about the kind of meetings that I discussed during the state plan report, where the agency conducts what might sometimes be called public hearings across the state to gather public input. So if we don't have something in state law, then the Rehab Council, in conjunction with the agency, has to develop procedures for those public meetings. So that is what this does. We have specified 72 hours notice for public meetings. There's a very particular reason why I've picked 72 hours. The special meeting notice period is 72 hours, so it dovetails with that. So that, I think, is a reasonable notice period in that regard. We also usually conduct these public meetings in the late fall and early winter period, midwinter period, just because that's when the state plan process is typically due. That's a very inclement time of the year with respect to weather. So I'd really like to be able to have the ability to look at the long 10-day forecasts to know what the weather is going to be like up in Farmington or Las Vegas or down in Las Cruces or Alamogordo or along the path of travel before we schedule the public meetings. And from a practical standpoint, you know, I'd like to try to coordinate with other events that might be taking place, and sometimes we just don't have that much notice. The revision to the council meeting section is the very, very last paragraph, which is paragraph F. So Kelly, could you read paragraph F, the last paragraph within the Open Meetings Act resolution?
My technology says no, I may not do that.
Okay. your technology is being fussy here. So Trish, could you read paragraph 14F, the last paragraph in the resolution? Trish, you are muted. Trish, are you there?
I'm here. I'm scrolling down now. 14F. Following the conclusion of a state of emergency as declared by the governor.
And actually, Trish, I'm going to interrupt you. Why don't you go ahead and read all of 14? It's not very long. And I've done so many of these resolutions for the commission, for the Council for Purchasing. This is also a national model that we've shared. So I'm always having to kind of keep in mind what conversations I've had with what bodies. And I think it'd be beneficial to read all of section 14. So read all of 14, because that's really basically new.
Okay. Number 14, meetings held during times of state emergencies. In the event that the governor declares a state of emergency due to the spread of an infectious disease, due to the spread of chemical, biological, or radiological hazards, or due to some other comparable disaster or emergency, and if postponing one or more essential or time-sensitive items of business until the conclusion of the state of emergency would be inconsistent with the proper and efficient operation of the council may hold a meeting designed to preserve the health and safety of the public while also adhering to the purposes of the Open Meeting Act. This shall consist, where possible, of the members of the council appearing telephonically or by video webcast, with the public able to observe the proceedings at both a physical location and a video webcast or telephonic location. However, where such arrangements are not possible due to the public health or safety concerns, and at the election of the chair or of the vice chair, should the chair be unavailable, the council may hold a video and or telephonic meeting subject to all of the following conditions and limitations. A, each member participating must be identified when speaking. All participants must be able to hear each other at the same time, and the public must be able to hear any member who speaks during the meeting. B, a video webcast or telephonic meeting may only be held if the members of the council are unable to meet in a physical location due to the state of emergency, including when an order is in place limiting or prohibiting public gatherings. C, both the notice and the agenda of any video webcast or telephonic meeting shall provide information to the public on how the meeting may be accessed remotely, either through video, webcast, telephone, or similar technology. All meeting documents, except those which are exempt from disclosure as a public record, shall be available on the website of the Commission for the Blind before and during the meeting for public access and review, shall be available through methods set forth in the meeting notice, or shall be available during the meeting for downloading through whatever video webcasting service may be used for the meeting. D, at any video webcast or telephonic meeting, all votes shall be cast through a roll call vote. The chair shall suspend all discussion in the event that the audio is interrupted or becomes unintelligible. E, the council shall make an audio recording of any video or telephonic meeting, and within 5 business days of the meeting, post the recording on the website of the Commission for the Blind for a period of not less than 30 days. The commission shall maintain a copy of the recording for a period in compliance with the federal regulations at 2 CFR 200.333 and as may otherwise be required by state record retention laws, and make the recording available as may be required by the Inspection of Public Records Act, NMSA 1978, sections 14-2-1 to 12-1947 as amended through 2019. F, following the conclusion of a state of emergency as declared by the governor, and should limits on public gathering remain in place, or should public health officials otherwise recommend that social distancing be maintained, the council may, in the interests of public health and safety, and if determined necessary by the chair, place reasonable limits on in-person attendance at meetings, provided that all interested individuals are afforded a reasonable opportunity to attend or participate. The council shall enable public access through telephonic or video webcast for any meeting at which such limitations are imposed. The council shall, in both the notice and the agenda of such a meeting, provide the public with information as to any in-person limitations, as well as information on how the meeting may be accessed remotely. The council shall also make and process an audio recording of such meeting in the same manner as required by subsection E.
So, Mr. Chairman, the section 13 is basically the same, except that we don't have to have the audio recordings of any public meetings. So I'd be happy to take any questions, or Tom, is there anything else you want to add about the Open Meetings Act resolution? I will say that the Foundation for Open Government has really appreciated what we have done here. Chairman Schreiber had me send the resolution that the commission adopted on April 16, and they've actually posted that to their webpage as one of the bright spots during this pandemic. And I think they will probably post this resolution as well. So it's a long document, but it's important that we have transparency. And Bernadine, I'd certainly also invite you to offer any comment you might have too.
Greg, I think it sounds good. I think folks are going through difficulty trying to figure these out. And I don't really have anything to say except for I think it sounds really good.
Great, I appreciate that. And I want to thank John Kreienkamp for really responding so proactively to my original email back in March. The Attorney General's office on the 17th of March, I think it was, issued a guidance that basically allows us to have these kinds of virtual meetings, but we'd started that conversation with them more than 2 weeks before. Mr. Kreienkamp has written most of the new language. I've modified a lot of it, and together I think we've come up with some really good language here that we're both proud of. So, Mr. Chairman, I think that probably is it, unless there are any other questions.
Greg, I have to, it just started to pour rain out here, and I got to go close the windows really quick. So keep talking about this for, give me 30 seconds.
Okay. I can certainly do that. that's not a problem. So, you know, we as a council really do have an obligation to comply with the Open Meetings Act. For those of us who are members, it's a misdemeanor offense punishable by a $500 fine for each and every infraction. So it is something that is taken very, very seriously. And, you know, it's easy to say, well, gosh, you know, let the agency worry about that. But those of us, including myself as a council member, we're the ones who would be paying out the $500 fine should there be a violation. So we certainly don't want to ever be in the position of doing that. And we really want to err on the side of caution with respect to openness. And I think it's important. We last approved our OMA resolution in December. Technically, we don't have to do this, but I definitely think it's a best practice. And I think it also protects us should somebody claim that we did not comply with the Open Meetings Act during this coronavirus time. We can definitely point to what we've done here. And again, this was developed in close consultation with the Attorney General's office. They're completely on board with us here. Oh, Tom, I think that was 30 seconds. Did you get your windows closed? It must not be. I can do another 30 seconds. So anybody have any comments or questions about the resolution here? The public meeting part of it, I think, is really, really important. I think an awful lot of states, probably the large majority, were not in compliance with that provision at 361.20b2. I presented on that back in April before the National Council of State Administrators of Vocational Rehabilitation, talking about some of the things that we're doing here in New Mexico proactively. This is certainly one of them. We'll talk more about that when we come to the COVID-19 section. So our agenda here is quite literally a national model. It's been posted by WINTAC, one of the Workforce Investment Technical Assistance Centers. It's been recommended to other states to adopt. So we really are in full compliance. So Tom, are you back?
I'm back.
Wonderful.
Any more discussion? Are we ready for our motion?
I believe so.
Tom, this is Urja.
Yes, Urja.
I move the approval of the Open Meetings Act resolution, which will include provisions for meetings held during times of state emergencies.
Is there a second on the motion?
This is Paul, I second.
Paul has seconded the motion. Any more discussion?
Mr. Chairman, one point in this meeting notice, you'll also notice that there are discussions of other kinds of emergencies. I certainly hope we don't have any biological, radiological, or other emergencies, but if you're going to adopt this, we might as well cover everything. Kind of expecting plague and pestilence now with all that's going on here, but hopefully we won't see that.
Just a small point, because it's coming upon, because it will be upon that time in about a half an hour. I just received a message from Ms. Montoya Cordova, member Montoya Cordova, that she needs to leave in at 3:15. So anything that anything that requires a quorum, if we're going to lose it.
All right, Kelly, thank you. And I think we can go through the rest of the items pretty quickly here. So. Mr. Chairman, I think we're ready for a roll call vote.
Okay. Katie, can you do the roll call?
Yes, sir. Bernadine Chavez.
Bernadine, I think Bernadine, I think you were muted.
Muted.
Yes.
Myself, aye. Urja?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Lily?
Yes.
Yolanda?
Yes.
Tom?
Yes.
And Greg?
Yes.
That passed unanimously.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you, everybody, for taking the time to read through that ahead of time. And thank you, Greg, for all the work on keeping us on the right track with regards to open meetings.
Great. Thank you, Tom. Appreciate that.
Next item on the agenda under item 10, new business. Oh, you know what? Greg, is there any other official vote we're going to need to Oh, the resource plan and item E. I wonder if we should move item E, which is approval of State Rehab Council resource plan, up so that we don't lose Yolanda for the vote. Is there any other things that we're going to have to vote on besides item E?
Mr. Chairman, no. Our opening resolution didn't, opening agenda approval did not contemplate that.
So why don't we move? Why don't we move item E up to be the next discussion item?
Can't do that.
Well, we could. If you're trying to figure out, Mr. Chairman, how we can do that, because our motion to approve the agenda did not include a motion to move items if we were missing a quorum. Yes, Kelly?
Mr. Chaff and Mr. Chair, will we lose a quorum?
Once that was my next question.
Yes.
Actually, no, I don't think so, because everyone's here. We've got Lila. Mm-hmm. We've got Lila May down in Las Cruces. We've got Paul. We've got Bernadine, Tom, Greg. Yolanda, I hate to lose you, but we will not lose a quorum. So I think the best option is to proceed forward here as the agenda says. So,
and I apologize. I just have a meeting with DFA at 3:20, and so I need to get on a Zoom. I have to organize a Zoom call with them. So I apologize.
Well, Yolanda,
yeah, we understand. Yeah.
Certainly appreciate what happens with DFA calls.
Okay, then we'll stick with the agenda. Lesson learned on the motion to approve the agenda. We should have provided more flexibility. So let's go to item B, report on commission response to the coronavirus crisis. Greg and Jim.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. We are doing a lot of things very, very differently. I want to thank staff for all of their very hard work. We have identified essential staff who are coming into the offices. Those staff are enabling us to function in a way that is allowable. If we were not doing that, we would be in a much worse position because we have to be able to show to the feds that our activities are in compliance with federal law, which means that we have to be able to function, we have to be able to process payments, we have to be able to receive mail. We have to do things like that that do require staff to come into the office. We've seen a number of agencies across the country being asked to do things that are violating federal law. A couple of states, Kentucky and Florida, were being asked to have some of their staff work on other programs outside of the vocational rehabilitation arena. Violates Federal Rehab Act fiscal rules unless it is paid for with some other source. But even if that happens, only 90%, only 10% of the total FTE count can be assigned. So RSA had to get involved in those two states to say that they could not do that. Some of that was focused around unemployment insurance. A huge, huge need, and Yolanda, I know that Workforce Solutions have done an incredible job in trying to make sure that that works as smoothly as it can. None of us ever anticipated the kind of circumstance that we're finding ourselves in now, where you would have millions of calls to try to obtain unemployment insurance, and in a couple of states, they reached out to the VR program, but the federal Rehab Act prohibited that. So, but we have not been asked to do that here in New Mexico. So I'm certainly appreciating that. We have created a category and newsline dedicated to coronavirus information. That is category 34. We are populating that with new stories on a almost daily basis, trying to identify stories from other sources that have a great deal of medical information that are sources that are widely recognized as being credible. One of those that we're using is Medical Express, which has been very, very helpful. We've had a lot of positive feedback on that. We've also provided information about the virus and resources through the National Federation of the Blind listserv. Currently, no employee who is not deemed essential can go to any of our offices without the approval of the supervisor. Anytime an employee is allowed to go to an office, I have to be notified. We're wanting to make sure that we are keeping the offices as safe as we possibly can. Raymond Saavedra, our building manager in Albuquerque, who helps us to keep the facility clean there, took and passed a training by the Global Advice, Global Viral Risk Advisory Council. We've also had that same training taken by staff in Alamogordo, and Raymond then trained Araya Merriam on the techniques that he learned. That was a certification that he was able to obtain. Jim, Kelly, what you guys want to add here? I saw that Lucy has jumped off, so anything you guys would like to add? You want to talk about the wellness calls, Jim and Kelly?
Sure. So one of the initiatives early on was that we would contact all of our current VR and IL consumers plus VR and IL consumers that had been closed in the previous 5 years and be able to provide them with resources regarding groceries, regarding medical information, hotline numbers, those types of things, just to make sure that they were not feeling abandoned while everybody was in stay-at-home mode. And so we were able to kind of pull the lists with Audrey T, weaves her magic and gets our lists for us, and then we kind of scrub those down a little bit. And again, as I had mentioned earlier, Tom, Mr. Chairman, we're able to have a number of different people participate in making, you know, the actual phone calls, which turned out to be close to 2,000 calls and our consumers kind of over that period, in that period of time, and that met that screening criteria. So again, the IL teachers made calls, Kelly's folks made calls, Lucy's folks made calls, some of our drivers who, of course, they didn't have a lot of driving to do, you know, when the person that they were supporting, counselors and our teachers, were basically working from home, so we weren't really doing much driving. So they were able to spend some of their time making calls. And I think that went really well. It was very well received. Some of the consumers, again, requested that we check back with them in subsequent weeks. And so we certainly did that. I think for the most part that is over now. But I think it was very, very well received, and I think it meant a lot to the individuals in terms of, just our reaching out to them, you know, meant a lot. And of course, for those that needed some of these resources that we were able to identify for them, then of course it was meaningful to them in that respect as well.
Right. Mr. Chairman, we've got a kind of a good bridge here into our students in transition to employment program. Part of what we are doing right now is also providing some very, very careful, very, very limited orientation and mobility training. We are using a consent form, which we developed, that the students or their parents are signing. If the student is over 18 and their own guardian, they can sign, but we're encouraging them to discuss with their family. That consent form talks about the risks of the coronavirus, risk to family members, risk to children. It also talks about the risk of not having proper orientation and mobility skills. This is an area that's really of concern because the schools are not providing it, may not provide it for a while here to come. And if a blind person is not keeping up their cane travel skills, then they're at greater risk of harm or injury if they're crossing streets or trying to travel on unfamiliar, uneven territory. We also are concerned about the new rules for social distancing. How will blind students keep that 6 feet distance? And that's something that we're trying to provide that orientation mobility training on. And Kelly, you're supervising some of the trainers. Do you want to talk about that? Part of our STEP program.
You're on mute, Kelly.
Kelly, I'm sure whatever you're saying is brilliant, but we can't hear you.
It helps to unmute yourself if you're in the right window, first of all. So yes, I am supervising two of those. So I would say that I am providing probably about that my program is probably providing about 80% of the training that is going on. And so again, as Greg said, we have a consent form. We do very much deeply encourage our adult students to discuss it with their families and really discuss it at each time as a lesson is scheduled, because family circumstances do change throughout this. Along with the consent form, there's an initial wellness check that the students have to go through. It's kind of a longer form. But then with each orientation and mobility session that is scheduled, we have the instructors call before. The instructors have to screen themselves to make sure that they are doing the short form, according to the short form, to make sure that they have not, we have questions on there regarding travel. We have questions on there regarding symptomology and if any household member is experiencing it or if there's been exposure. These things are important because we do have some families who still have people working outside the home and may be exposed as a result. And then, you know, it takes one person to pass it on to a lot of people. So we do have those sorts of things. We ask about exposure, symptomology, and travel to kind of sum it up. And if they've experienced those things in the last 14 days, if they answer yes to any of the questions that are on that form, we cancel the lesson until we can do further research, whether we need research into the situation. If we need to contact the Department of Health to get some advice, we do that. But really, we've made it so that we're able to be guided by the public health order and kind of watch too for the hotspots that are in New Mexico and areas of concern. The lessons are fairly short. They're not the 3-hour death marches that we have during the STEP program.
For the record, we don't actually call them death marches. Kelly's engaging in a little bit of hyperbole there.
Right.
For the record.
Yes. They're not the 3-hour lessons, in other words, that are done during the center-based skills.
More rigorous confidence training is what I would.
Right, more rigorous confidence. So the lessons are really only about an hour. One of the things the instructors must do is talk with the family about what the lesson plan is, what the family's expectations are for their child, and what they're comfortable with. Most lessons are being conducted outdoors. And we're really working toward age appropriateness and expectation appropriateness on the part of the family, because, you know, it doesn't help us to train to things that student's not going to need in the next 1, 2, 3 years, for instance.
So I'm going to jump in here with a couple of closing thoughts on this before we lose Yolanda. Yeah, this is a really critical function, O&M skills, and you know, it's unfortunate that the schools are, I'm sorry, is that Yolanda?
I'm still here.
Oh, great. So it's unfortunate that the schools aren't able to provide this service, and we don't know when they will, which is part of why we've done this. We are looking at this quite literally on a week-to-week basis. We had a call yesterday where we asked ourselves if this is something that we want to continue. I've given a direction that we're going to do it this week. I will decide towards the end of the week if we will do it next week. We will not do it next week unless I affirmatively say that we can. You know, I'm really concerned that there might be some additional spikes. We see very large increases in Arizona, Texas. You know, we're on the I-25, I-40 corridor. I think there's a very small window of opportunity here where we can do this safely, reasonably, and prudently. We want to take full advantage. Again, we're concerned about the kids' safety, the young adults' safety, because they're not getting this really essential service. To illustrate the kinds of caution that we're taking, we have assigned two vehicles to each teacher. Each teacher uses a vehicle every other day. In the off day, the vehicle is cleaned, left outside in the sun for a little natural sanitization. We really want to make sure that that vehicle is properly cleaned. There's hand sanitizer in the vehicles. So unless Jim or Kelly or anyone else, Kevin, is there any other agency responses to the coronavirus that you want to mention here?
So, Greg, I just wanted to say, too, that in accordance with the governor's order, students are and the instructors are wearing masks, and that is part of the checking practices that the instructors are doing, is making sure that students have a mask, and instructors do have an extra on them if it is needed.
Right, thank you. And we have ordered quite a large quantity of masks so that those are available for people coming into the building. This is going to require some culture changing here for employees. Obviously, we're waiting for additional direction from the governor as to when the state is going to start to open up in terms of these state offices. We don't know when that's going to be. I think it might be yet several months away. You know, we're all watching what's taking place with respect to the virus transmission very, very closely. So, Mr. Chair, that's what we're doing right now. You know, I really do thank staff for working through these very trying, very difficult circumstances. Most staff has been able to successfully telework. You can see my study here behind me. I could give you a quick tour of this. My wife calls it my museum, but all of us who are able to telework, you know, it's been a difficult transition. So I really appreciate those who telework. It's not easy. I've probably will end up putting in about 120 hours this pay period. You know, so you know, we're not kicking around watching Murder, She Wrote and things like that as we're working at home. It's tough, difficult stuff we're doing. So anyway, any other comments, anyone?
Go ahead, Yolanda.
I'm just going to close by saying that the whole push to go to telework was very difficult for our agency because we had to stand up our entire unemployment call center into a telework situation. So we had a call center. We have a call center that has about 150 employees. And so moving those folks and being able to still continue to stand up our services and the call center and everything that we need to do, and having to do that in the period of 2 weeks, I would say 14 days, was really intense. And so I do know that we really appreciate the assistance and the encouragement that we've received from our state partners who have helped us so that we can continue to do that. But when you come over to our building, which is four floors, the TIWA building right now literally only has maybe 20 employees in it. Everybody else is working from home. And we've learned a lot about what works and doesn't work. What's not yet stood up for us yet are career services at our local offices. So we're getting ready to bring that back online. It's going to be, we've always had that available, you know, by phone call. But now we're going to be getting ready to do things by appointment so that we can start to open up the Workforce Connection Centers. What's going to be happening with unemployment here real soon is the additional pandemic unemployment benefit. I think you all have probably heard of this. There's an extra $600 a week on top of their weekly benefit amount. That's going to be coming to an end at the end of July. And so as a result of that, it's going to put a lot of families in interesting positions if there's no jobs for them to go to. So we're still waiting for additional guidance from the federal government in terms of what that's going to mean for all of the individuals that we have on unemployment. And right now we have probably about 155,000 people who are receiving unemployment benefits in New Mexico. That is... An average for us prior to the pandemic was anywhere between about 8,000 people. So we jumped from 8,000 to 155,000. So,
wow.
So it's been a tremendous lift in our state. And we do have a lot of families that are in serious, there's serious concerns around poverty and what that's going to mean. But again, as we work with economic development, the governor's office on reopening and recovery, how we get individuals back to work is going to be a key component of where our focus is going to be. And quite frankly, I'm very concerned about what employment's going to look like, especially for those that are hardest to employ and those that are often left out in employment. And that's, our individuals with disabilities, veterans, and also young people. So we're going to be working really hard to pay attention to that and, be a partner with agencies such as the Commission for the Blind and DVR so that we can make sure that we can help individuals get to employment and get to the kinds of jobs that we're hoping that we can recover and recoup and create in our state. And so I'm looking at the clock and I have to go, but so Workforce Solutions, we appreciate the partnership. So thank you very much.
Yolanda, thanks for joining us. We'll let you go. Appreciate it. Bye-bye. So, Mr. Chairman, we've kind of segued into the STEP section here with the discussion of what we're doing in STEP. We can continue that, or if you want to take any questions, or if you want to take a five-minute break, we could all sit down, and that would kind of be my recommendation, that we take a five-minute break at this point, but just leave the lines and connections open and don't disconnect everybody. Mr. Chairman, does that work?
So we'll take a break until 3:25.
That works.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Audrey, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
So I have a question for you. It's a technology question. In my Zoom video window, in the bottom left corner, there's the unmute icon and there's a start video icon. Am I supposed to click on the start video to be able to be seen on the video, or does that start recording something?
Yeah, that allows them to see your camera, and you can do Alt V also, and that would do the same thing. That turns on and turns off your camera.
All right. Well, I'm going to be extraordinarily daring, and I'm going to click on that, and let's see what happens. Well, nothing happened.
Nothing yet. I wonder if we lost one more caller.
Kobe went off the line, just so everyone knows. Tom, are you using your computer or your phone?
Both.
So on your computer, there's like a little gray bar on the bottom, and it will have a little picture of a video camera.
Yeah.
And it should say start video.
And I just did that, but I may get disconnected. If I do, I'll call back in.
Okay.
Hi, Tom. You can also use Alt V to start and stop video.
There you go. Yay.
Did that work?
Yes, because I can see you're wearing a blue shirt.
Oh, man, I need to button my shirt up here.
Yep, I saw you, Tom.
Well, I'm glad I just had it unbuttoned. Like, you know, I had to get dressed for this meeting. I've been mostly wearing T-shirts, shorts, and flip-flops all summer long. I think this is maybe the third time I had on a collared shirt.
I just put on a regular T-shirt. I didn't put on my suit, my suit jacket. I was like, I love y'all, but it's too hot. So
I know, Tom, I give Mr. Greg Trapp kudos because he's actually wearing a suit.
You know, I thought of putting on a tie, but I'm not sure I remember how to tie the knot.
Oh, that's hilarious.
But I am wearing one of my favorite Hawaiian shirts, so.
You look very nice.
Thank you. Boy, and you talk about impacts to the economy. Hawaii, I mean, they're still doing 14-day quarantine for anybody that comes into the state. So they've essentially decimated the entire tourism industry, and they've just extended that. So, I mean, fortunately, our state is not in that circumstance. So Greg, I just took a huge risk and I played with my technology a little bit, and I've got the video is now up on me. So.
Oh, excellent. Well, good. And your rain has made it here to my house. So hopefully, it hitting the skylight won't be a problem with the audio. So,
I don't know if it's raining over here. So, I live in the Northeast Heights, so I don't know if it's raining over here.
Well, Lila May, hopefully when it comes down to you in Las Cruces, it'll make it down there too. All right. So, Chairman, it's 3:25. I think we can begin if we're all back. Trish, are you there?
I'm here.
All right.
I was just opening the front door to see if it was raining here.
All right. Jim, you're there?
Yes, sir.
All right. Kelly?
Yes, I am here. Because I'm still coordinating my part of the STEP program, I'm having to
is to send some text messages, so I'm trying not to let that disturb anybody.
No, I understand that. They're going to juggle lots of things here. So, Mr. Chair, I think I'm not sure how many members we've got back, but if you can see on the screen, or Audrey, do we know? Well, I guess
see a
we don't.
Chair for Paul.
All right.
Well, chair of Greg.
Audrey, how are you?
It's a thunderstorm. It'll be over. 5 minutes.
So it looks like Paul is the only one we're missing.
Okay, well, sure. I think we could probably proceed if you wish.
Okay, so the next item on the agenda is under new business. It's item C, report on the students in transition to employment program. Mr. Salas.
All right, good afternoon again, Mr. Chairman. So as far as our STEP program this year, we do have about 30 students, which is pretty typical for us as far as our summer program. Now, typically, though, we as you know, we have a residential program at the Orientation Center. We have a commuter program here in Albuquerque, and we have community placements. That is all out the window this year, and out the window here at my house. I have rain, just like at a number of other places here. So this year, we are partnering with the Central Region Education Cooperative, and again, as well as the other units that are typically involved, again, O Center staff, Kelly's staff from the Skills Center, and our independent living teachers. We're using Google Classroom, so we're using the G Suite for some of the tools there, and Google Classroom for course materials and assignments and things like that. And then the staff are using Zoom for direct instruction, remote instruction. Again, Greg had talked about, and Kelly had talked about, some of our in-person orientation mobility training. So as far as Rec 5, they are handling some of the career development pieces, training, instruction, job exploration, counseling, opportunities for post-secondary education, self-advocacy training, some of those soft skills, and then our Orientation Center staff, Skill Center staff, and our independent living teacher staff are involved in the blindness skills training. Kelly had talked about, again, Greg and Kelly had talked about some of the components of the cane travel training regarding the consent form and screening forms, vehicles, and some of those types of things. Now, one of the pieces that is often a very important component of the students in transition to employment program is the employment piece, which has shifted from kind of an equal part of the process to, unfortunately this year, a more minimal part of the process. The training component is the heavyweight piece of the program this year, but we do have some students who are working. We do have 3 students, actually, who are working. One is a student who is working with his uncle, who's an electrician in Arizona, and this student is working as an electrician helper to his uncle's in his uncle's business. We have another student whose mom works for a lawyer, a law firm, and our particular student is interested in becoming a lawyer as well, and so she is working in that law office in an administrative support and kind of paralegal capacity. And then we have one other student who, man, it's really pouring here at my house. We have one other student who actually got a job last summer as part of STEP, and it was a job placement that was created by, again, the job developers from the Central Region Education Cooperative. So that was in an administrative support office assistant type of a position with a construction company. In that particular situation, the construction company offered the student to stay on over the school year to work during the kind of in an after-school capacity during the school year, which the student did. And so this year, as we came into the stay-at-home component. Again, construction industries jobs were allowed to continue working as essential functions. So this particular student was able to continue working with this construction company, and I believe now this summer again is continuing to, you know, to work with this construction company. So that is a nice opportunity for this individual that is really kind of bridged from last summer through, you know, through this summer. So we do have, again, three students who are actually working. So that is an extra little benefit during this difficult time when 155,000 folks, according to Yolanda, wow, are on unemployment insurance. Wow, that's amazing. So Mr. Chairman, that's my report. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Jim. Are there any questions for Jim? Jim, I had a question, and it's tied in to students, not necessarily STEP, but when you talk about the metrics for the state plan and measurable gain and that kind of thing, I've read some comments that a lot of educators believe that this hurried, thrown together distance learning situation that the schools found themselves in for the last couple months of the school year really was not a very effective way to teach and to train students. Do you see going forward any, let's say the universities don't open up and it's all distance learning, are our blind students going to be able to complete 12 semester credits in a distance learning environment in college?
I haven't heard anybody talking about an inability to do that. Of course, for quite a number of years, there are a lot of colleges that have offered online programs, you know, undergrad and graduate level programs online. And again, a number of our counselors have taken online graduate programs in order to get master's degrees in rehab counseling. So certainly that's been in play at the college level for a number of years. I think the challenge for some of those students would be the lab, you know, lab type of classes that they otherwise would certainly be taking in in residence, and I'm not really sure how they are trying to accomplish credits in those kinds of classes, but so I think those would still be a challenge. But I really don't think they wouldn't be able to, as long as on the education side they're delivering materials in an accessible format, and our students certainly have the right kind of gear, and we're able to provide the kind of training that our students need to be efficient in accessing a learning management system.
Okay, good. Thank you. Are there any other questions for Jim on the STEP program? Okay, we're going to move forward to item 10D on the agenda. That's the discussion of waivers proposed by the U.S. Department of Education. Mr. Trapp.
Chairman, thank you very, very much. So there is a lot of discussion of waivers of various federal provisions. Our meeting today is essentially a waiver of the Open Meetings Act requirements that meetings take place in person. At the federal level, there are waivers that are being discussed that would help us to more efficiently work given some of the restrictions that we are seeing with respect to the coronavirus. So the Department of Education has submitted proposed waivers to Congress, and those waivers deal with all of the Department of Education funded programs. They're actually quite complicated, quite sweeping. I've only studied closely the ones related to vocational rehabilitation And it's clear that they are developed by the senior executive staff. They're very, very carefully thought and very much crafted to provide the maximum amount of benefit, recognizing the restrictions we're all under. So one of those requirements would waive the requirement to reserve and spend at least 15% of our vocational rehabilitation grant on pre-ets. That would be for federal fiscal 20. I would very, very enthusiastically support that. It would allow us to recognize the reality that we simply are not going to be able to spend all of our reserve with the closing of schools, with the near impossibility or great difficulty of putting students in employment. You heard Jim report earlier that normally the employment component was really the biggest component. Now it's a much, much smaller component, and we've only been able to get three students employed, and those had very unusual circumstances that allowed for that to be done safely. So tied to that would be to allow agencies to carry over for a second year the federal fiscal year 19 grant. Now, we spent 8 months ago our federal fiscal year 19 grant, except for pre-employment transition services. We carried that over into federal fiscal 20. That carryover period ends on September 30, but we would be allowed to carry it over one more year. That I think would recognize the fact that agencies are not able to provide the pre-ET services. We could not spend the fiscal 19 pre-ETs grant. So we would still be providing pre-ET services to the extent that we can using 19 funds. Now, we could use federal fiscal 20 funds on pre-ETs. We just would not have to. The other part of the waiver is that it would allow us to use our vocational rehabilitation grant funds to restock spoiled merchandise for our Randolph Shepherd Act vendors. That would be another significant one. So we're very enthusiastically supporting that. I'd be happy to take any questions, or Jim or Kevin, Kelly, if any of you have comments that you want to add to that. I guess not. You can hear the training much harder here, so.
Mr. Chair, this is Bernadine. I just wanted to say that the National Coalition of SRCs supported the waivers as well and was encouraging each SRC to send in a letter of support for the agency if they felt like they needed it. We didn't have a meeting at the time, and then it kind of traveled through, and so some SRCs just said that they would do it as the agency needed it. But that may be something on our radar for future, for a future agenda item if we need to, but it doesn't sound like we're gonna need to. Do you think, Greg?
Well, that's a great question, Berna, and I'm glad you asked that. So right now, the waivers are to be approved by the House and Senate, but that meeting has not taken place. I have been in contact with the governor's federal representative several times about this. I think it'd be fantastic for Chairman O'Brien to send a letter to our congressional delegation urging that they act upon these waivers, or at least explaining the benefit of the waivers. The reality is that they may not happen unless there is a clear support for it.
I do have a template that I could send to Tom that the coalition gave us. So I can send it over and see if that's kind of a starting point for him.
I think that'd be great. These are from Secretary DeVos, and you know, I have emphasized that these are prepared by the Senior Executive Service. You know, this is not a political thing. These are waivers that I think have broad support amongst the community. So I really hope that they can be moved. If they aren't, we're going to be in a much, much tighter position, especially if we have additional cuts come next year. So if we can get the waiver of the federal fiscal 20 Priets reserve, that would be extraordinarily beneficial. So, Bernie, I appreciate your raising that aspect of it. Without the waiver of the Priets funds, we could all be in a really, really tight position, especially those agencies that are under an order of selection. So, Mr. Chairman, yes, sir.
I have a question. I was on mute. I had asked about three questions and you just ignored me. So finally it dawned on me that I was on mute. Is the letter something that you and I can work on and I can sign, or do we need a motion from the SRC that endorses sending a letter to RSA on the waiver issue, or how should we move forward on that officially as a council?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think you have the authority to send it as chair of the council. We don't have it as an agenda item. I had not thought of that. It would have been nice. So for it to be an official action of the council, we would need to have an agenda item and a vote. But I think as council chair, you certainly have the authority under your own prerogative to send that letter.
Okay, so Bernadine's going to send me a template and I'll take a look at that, Greg, and then I'll work with you. So that as the chair of the SRC, I can get that sent in.
Right, and I'll also be contacting our congressional delegation. If other council members have any desire to contact their representative or senator about this, I think that would also be helpful because we really do need to move this.
Mr. Trapp, this is Katie Ellis. I actually have a sit-down conversation with Mr. Lujan tonight, so I'll see if I can touch base with him about this.
Did you say that was tonight?
Yes.
Okay. I will send you the waiver document from Secretary DeVos so you can give it to him, but you know, explain that this is coming from the Senior Executive Service.
Okay. Yes, sir.
So, Greg, I had a question on the waiver. So it waives the Priets reserve spending requirement, but it's not rolling it forward and compounding into the future, right?
No, it would not.
Okay.
So basically, we would pick up with the 21 Priets reserve just as though nothing had happened. Now, I've been involved with the National Council of State Agencies for the Blind, working on comments to the regulations. I should have mentioned this. The federal regulations were reopened to allow additional comment on the Priets requirement. I'm not quite sure why RSA did that, but I think that they may give us some additional flexibility here, recognizing what's going on. We have in, you know, as an advocacy community, considered it asking for waiving more of the period of performance. And the period of performance is the time during which you're allowed to spend the federal grant. But the problem with that, as you suggest, is that you end up just pushing everything forward. And that's in the end, kind of just kicking that can down the road. But waiving the Priets requirements for a whole fiscal year as a one-time thing would be great. I know Congress is very much committed to the Priets requirement, but I think for Katie and others to explain that schools are closed, jobs are not available, you know, particularly for these summer jobs. Nobody wants to take on an intern during a global pandemic. So no matter how hard we try, there simply is no way that we're going to be able to spend the federal fiscal 20 pre-ETS reserve.
So the money that you are supposed to spend or reserve would be available for other purposes within the overall vocational program within the commission. Is that
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Okay. We could use that to pay for salaries of VR counselors. We could use it for administrative costs. It would be as though we were given an additional $700,000 in new VR funds without the pre-ETS reserve requirement.
And we don't face any risk of getting spanked for not meeting the pre-ETS reserve spending requirement.
No, that'd be part of the waiver.
Yeah. Okay. And then
go ahead.
And then you said it would be for fiscal year 20. So that money would be available past September 30th to spend or up until September 30th?
So we're currently in federal fiscal 20. So basically we could spend it this federal fiscal year and the carryover year, which starts October 1st. So it would be available, right. It'd be available through September 30th of 2021. So very good question.
That really has the potential of helping us as we look further out into the state budget problems.
Exactly. I've been counting on that. And I've been very much surprised that the waivers haven't been acted upon and frustrated because they were sent out, I believe, a couple months ago.
Okay. Well, I am just sitting around eating bonbons and watching reruns. So whatever I can do to help get some support ginned up, I will do.
Sounds great.
Okay. Any more on that topic?
Anyone else? Jim, Kelly, are you back? Nope, nothing else on that topic.
Okay. Next item under new business is the approval of the State Rehab Council Resource Plan. That's Mr. Trapp and Ms. Verma.
Right, and I think I heard that Kelly had left the meeting. Audrey, is she back or is she still away?
I do not have her connected right now. And she's not in the waiting room.
All right, well, we will proceed without her then, and she will join us when she is able to hopefully she did not lose her power. Jim, you're still with us, right? Jim, are you there?
Yes, sir, I'm still here.
All right. All right, so Mr. Chair, then we need to discuss a resource plan. So I'd actually hoped to have gotten something out in writing that we could have voted, but I do have a very detailed description here of what I will propose. So, the last few days have been really pretty intense. We had the state plan requirements that we had to deal with from a little before. We've got the legislative session. We've got performance evaluations that are due. I kept getting fiscal analysis requests and had to get out the minutes. So was not quite able to attend to this in the way I hoped, but here's what I propose. So we will assign Kelly Verma as the SRC liaison, as we have done, with up to 10% of her time being dedicated to the support of the State Rehabilitation Council. We will also assign other staff as is necessary to support the publication of legal notices, compilation of minutes, we will provide mileage and per diem for members. We will process the necessary purchase orders and vouchers. We will provide any attendant and child care support that might be necessary for members to attend meetings. I think this is important. We were able to address that issue with the Department of Finance and Administration, so that's good. I appreciate Kevin's help with that. We will assist in the production of the council annual report, paying for printing and other associated costs. This year, that's being done by Horizons of New Mexico, and we should get the hard copy documents here. We are supposed to get them on or before September 30th. So Trish has been working with Horizons of New Mexico on that.
You do mean June 30th, right?
Yeah. Did I say something different?
You said September 30th.
Oops, I'm thinking federal fiscal years. By June 30th, we will, subject to travel and funding restrictions, support at least one council member to attend the National Coalition of State Rehabilitation Council meeting either the spring or fall. And again, that's at least one. So that's what I would propose as our resource plan. Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to take questions or if there are any other suggestions or ideas.
Are there any questions or suggestions from the council?
Bernard, do you have any thoughts?
Sorry, my buttons aren't working very well. I guess it's the rain. So, no, I think that pretty much covers it.
All right. So, Mr. Chair, we would need a vote and a motion on this one.
I do have one comment. I think that as I fade into the sunset as the chair and a member of the SRC, that being able to attend the national meetings in Bethesda, I think I went to a spring meeting, really, really helpful. And I would just encourage to be able to get other people to those conferences on the council. So,
Mr. Chair,
the meeting in October, if it takes place in person, will be in, did you say this, Greg? It's in San Antonio.
Right. I did not mention that. And there is a poll out right now asking if states would be in favor of having that meeting or not. I'm rather doubtful that we'll have it, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, I agree.
And Mr. Chairman, I certainly agree. We have talked about switching to a commission-only model, and we can talk more about that during the public discussion session. The earliest that could possibly happen would be July of next year. And we don't know if it will actually happen. So I think we definitely want to continue to support the council, get new council appointments, and see what will take place. So I can talk about that issue now, or we could have a vote on the resource plan, whatever you prefer.
Let's go ahead and vote on the motion on the resource plan. Can I hear a motion?
This is Paul, so move.
All right, Paul made the motion, and who seconded it?
Urcha.
Urcha seconded the motion to approve the State Rehabilitation Council resource plan as presented by Greg. Any more discussion? All right, let's go ahead and call the vote. Katie, can you do a roll call vote, please?
Yes, sir. Bernadine Chavez.
Sorry about that. Yes.
Myself, yes. Urja Lansing?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Lily?
Yes.
Yolanda, she has left the meeting. Tom?
Yes.
And Greg?
Yes.
It passed without hesitation Yolanda was missed this part of the meeting.
Yeah, and actually, Katie, I should clarify, I have voted yes, but technically I shouldn't be doing that since I'm not actually allowed to vote, but I would indicate my approval. I think this is great to have the resource plan, and it certainly is a compliance item. So, Mr. Chairman, I've got this written up in detail, and the minutes will reflect exactly what we approved.
Great. And we knew all along, Greg, that you really weren't voting. You were voting to show your encouragement and support.
Encouragement and support always, yes. You know, we've not had to do this except for roll call votes. So, yeah, again, this is new for all of us.
Yes. Okay, so the next item on the agenda is item 11, council open discussion.
Mr. Chair, hold on. I think it sounded like Kelly had come back and then left again. So I just would like to give her the chance if she's there to say anything. I didn't hear that she had rejoined, but I just heard that she'd left.
She popped back up for a second and must have lost connection again.
Yeah, she must be having connectivity issues. So, all right, Ms. Chairman, let's continue.
So we're on agenda item 11, council open discussion.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I may, I did mention the Commission for the Blind and moving to having only a Commission for the Blind model. In light of the pandemic and our current situation, I had considered whether or not that's something that we could do. Kelly, welcome back. We have approved our resource plan, but I wanted to give you a chance to offer any comments on the resource plan. I have dedicated up to 10% of your time to the council. We're gonna also send at least one council member to the NCSRC meeting. So if there's anything in addition, we'll support the council in all the other usual ways with staff, publication, and other items.
Fantastic. I am in full support, and I am glad to be back. I can't apologize for my exit because it was not my fault.
That's, I understand that happens. So, Mr. Chairman, I had a conversation with RSA about this very issue. We're somewhat in a unique position. We can proceed to having a commission-only model, but they feel that because our statute requires only one commissioner be blind at present, that we have to actually change the statute to require a majority of blind members before we can make that move. Also, they believe that there needs to be a handoff of the duties from the council to the commission. So that was a very, very beneficial conversation. So in the statute language, we would actually include in their language that would speak to that handoff. So, you know, as part of just recognizing our reality and our limitations on resources, I really do think that we need to make that move and work on it for the next legislative session. You know, I do hope to expand the size of the commission to give additional opportunity for people to participate. And we've also talked about having an advisory group within that, and I'd still like to do that. So within our public discussion process, that is my comment. So I'm actually going to need to step aside and make a call here for a minute. So Jim, if you could take over for me, I will do that, and I will let you know when I'm back. So Mr. Chairman, thank you very much.
Thank you, Greg. So, Jim, do you know if the governor's in favor of this, right? She'll support it in the next legislative session?
She was willing to express willingness to bring it up at the next session, yes. Yeah, she was willing, again, in this past session, to only bring up the elimination of the requirement for a blind registry. So yes, we're expecting her support in this next session.
Now that, so did the blind registry issue get approved? It died, didn't it?
It died. Yeah. It never made it to final.
So you're still maintaining the
blind out of committee.
If I might clarify, it did pass the Senate. It made it through the House committees. It got put on the floor of the House floor calendar. That is where it died. There were many, I would look every day, and there were many, many things that were going before us. And it really did not make it to the House floor calendar until the day before the legislative session ended. It got on the calendar, it just did not get done as part of the business of the House.
Right, and this is Greg, I'm back. So what was taking place there, I presume you're talking about the language to eliminate the registry.
Right.
So what was taking place there was that the Republicans were requiring debate of every bill and it was being heard. So that extended the debate time so that a lot of bills were just not considered, and our bill, which had broad support, even during one of the committee hearings, and Kelly, I don't know if you mentioned this, one of the Republican senators who had been voting, just as a matter of routine against everything that was coming before the Democrat-controlled committee, voted in favor of this one. He got kind of ribbed for that, and he said that he was going to make an exception for this. So we did have really, really great support. We had Senator Nancy Rodriguez helping us with our budget. We had Senator Bill Payne also helping us with the registry and other items. We certainly do thank individuals like Senator Payne for his service. He's completed his term now, so he's a Republican. Senator Rodriguez, though, was really, really fantastic with her support. We appreciated that. Kelly did a great job in tracking this. It was not an easy thing, but we really learned the roundhouse and passed out an awful lot of information. So we almost got there, and it was really a very, 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 very good dress rehearsal for what we're going to have to do next year.
Right, I agree. And Senator Rodriguez was a great supporter of the removal of the language, and if I recall correctly, she has indicated that she will support us if she can in our further endeavors related to the commission.
She was the sponsor of the bill that eliminated the registry.
Tom, this is Urja.
Yes, Urja.
So, Greg, where are we? Are we going to have to go back to square one with that bill?
Yep.
Yes.
All righty. Yep.
But we will draw up a broader bill that would expand the commission size, eliminate the registry, eliminate the requirement for ophthalmologists to determine legal blindness. So there are a number of things. We just could not include all of those in the short session, but the governor recognized how critical this particular issue was and felt that it deserved to be put on the call for the short session. The registry of blind persons is outdated, outmoded. I do also, Berna, appreciate Jim Jackson's support. He testified in favor of a number of times as well during all of the hearings, and there were a lot of hearings that we had to go to.
There were a lot of hearings. And as we've talked about, in expanding the commission size, requiring a majority blind membership.
Right, right. That's really the key, is that majority blind membership.
So until that legislation is passed, are we maintaining the registry of blind people?
Good question.
I don't know if you were asked that question in the legislature.
No, but I was prepared to answer it. So we have our case management system, and that case management system has the names of all the individuals that we have served. We have maintained that. That's now some 20 years old. Has a long list of names. So that is part of our compliance. But at the same time, really, it would be violative of individuals' rights to, you know, complete a list of blind people in the state per se. You know, there are some pretty bad histories with such lists historically. We also have to be concerned about HIPAA violations, the prospect of data breaches. It really is not something that we should be in the business of maintaining.
But from what Jim said earlier, when he talked about one of the things that the commission did with the shutdown and in terms of contacting 2,000 current and former consumers of the commission, sounds like that's as close as we get to having some kind of a registry of blind people. It's really not complete. It's only those people that have been served by the commission, but, you know.
It is, you know, the determination of who is a blind person, you know, it really would be an onerous task to complete. I remember when I first became director of the commission, I asked my predecessor, Gary Haug, about that provision. And he said, well, there's a filing cabinet in the office, and they would point to it. So I'm pointing to a computer.
So I can hear rain coming in. It sounds like a freight train. So it might have hail in it too. And I might lose part of my connection, but the phone could keep working. We'll see. So,
all right. Folks can also turn off their video if you start to have connection problems.
Okay.
That can decrease your bandwidth use.
Thank you. Is there any more discussion on that topic?
Mr. Chair, I did have a question for Greg.
Katie.
I know you said we're going to get rid of how people determine blindness, saying ophthalmology gets determined blindness. So how are we going to know who is blind and who is not, I guess?
So great question. So our statute was written by Fred Schroeder, Joe Cordova, Sue Benbow. You know, they were all about 25. Joe was probably 30 when they did that. I think Ermelinda Miller probably was in that too. She would have been maybe 35. But it was mostly Joe and Fred and Sue. So they did a pretty good job if you think about somebody in their, you know, early to mid-20s writing up a law. But they kind of, you know, took laws from across the country and said, well, that looks good. And this particular provision really is not necessary. So it basically says that blindness shall be determined by means of a eye exam from a licensed ophthalmologist licensed in the state of New Mexico. That's a pretty good quote. But we've seen the optometry practice expand greatly since 1986. So in 1986, you did not have optometrists who could perform certain kinds of eye procedures that, you know, we would recognize as being surgical in nature. They, you know, can now prescribe different eye medications. They can treat glaucoma. There's a whole host of things that optometrists can do, and they certainly can determine visual acuity. That's, you know, something that obviously is things that optometrists do every day. We think, in fact, that optometrists have really a great amount of resources that they can bring. Most eye care here in New Mexico is performed by optometrists. So it recognizes that reality. There are also other healthcare professionals that can determine blindness. You know, I have bilateral ocular prostheses. I don't need to have an ophthalmologist say, oh, Mr. Trapp, you know you're blind. or an optometrist. A nurse practitioner is more than capable of reasonably making, you know, making a reasonable medical determination that I, as a person who has two prostheses, is blind. So it also reflects the language of the Rehab Act. So good question, but we just want to make things go more smoothly. Frankly, it places a burden on our consumers to require that they have an eye exam from an ophthalmologist. Now, the reality is that for most people who are blind sufficiently to qualify for our services, they have seen an ophthalmologist at some point in their life. So we can get that. But it is a change that is needing to be done. Jim, do you want to add anything to that?
Only that, that you're right. Most folks that come to us, certainly for VR services, have seen an ophthalmologist. But again, not all.
Right.
Not all. And so again, for some of those, we do have to make an appointment with an ophthalmologist, depending on where the person lives in the state. That might be next week, or might be next month, or might be a couple months from now before the ophthalmologists roll through their community. You know, where they could get an appointment. So it can definitely restrict the provision of services, delay the provision of services when otherwise it could otherwise be provided much sooner. So this will be a really great help.
Thank you for that clarification. I appreciate it.
Hey, Greg, this is Tom.
Yes.
So even though I won't be on the council, if there's anything I can do to help in January, February with the state legislature, I'd be glad to do that. A very good friend of mine, Dr. Greg Schmedes, who was a state representative, ran for the state Senate in the primary, and he beat the Republican incumbent, Jim White. And so now Greg will be running for that Senate seat. I think it's Senate seat 19. It's Four Hills in the East Mountains. And Dr. Schmedes is a very, very strong advocate of the Commission for the Blind. And it would probably good be, if he wins his election in November, it would probably be good for me to socialize him with that proposed legislation so that he would understand the purpose of it and be in favor of it. And I would be glad to do that.
I appreciate that. That would be helpful.
Hey, Tom, he's a really nice man. In fact, you gave him my number and he called me.
Yes.
And he was very concerned about what the state's policies were going to be on care for people in hospitals that needed ventilators. And he wanted to make sure that people with disabilities weren't left out by virtue of their disability. And so we did write a letter to the governor about our position on that. And he wanted to be of assistance for that. So yeah, I was really impressed with him.
But he called me, Berna, and he said, because I've offered to help him on stuff. And I've helped him a few times on disability-related stuff behind the scenes and just to help get him educated. And so he called and said, who do you know at DRNM? This is the issue. And I said, well, you need to call Berna. And she will steer you wherever, you know. And he called you within minutes. And then after he talked to you, he called me back and thanked me and let me know what a big help you guys were. Greg is he's a physician. He's an ear, nose, and throat specialist. He has five or six kids, very strong family commitment. I think he graduated number one in his medical school class from University of Texas. I think he's a very accomplished young doctor. So, and he has a heart for people with disabilities. And so I feel fortunate that I've gotten to know him. And he knows that if I need something or we need something for the commission, I'm calling him. But he also can call me if he has questions. on anything, I'll be glad to help them. So, okay. Anything else under open discussion?
I do have one thing I wanted to say. I think the last meeting, we were all congratulating Katie on her graduation, and I neglected in my report to say that I am thrilled that she is an advocate at Disability Rights New Mexico. So she's a colleague of mine, and she's done a great job. Poor thing. She came into the office and was there for about an hour and a half, and we were all sent home to work at home. So she hasn't even got to set up her office or anything, but she's doing a great job working remotely and has a complex caseload, and we're thrilled to have her.
And I know Katie is not watching Murder, She Wrote.
No. No. A number of us were really pleased
that DRNM saw fit to hire Katie, and that you guys have taken her under her wing to train and mentor and make her an even stronger force to be reckoned with.
Tom, this is Urja.
Urja?
Greg, thank you for sending the article that you co-authored regarding the 100-year anniversary of vocational rehabilitation.
You are very, very welcome. I appreciate that. Thank you for mentioning that. So I did jointly write an article with Diane Morning Brown, basically based off of something that I sent to our employees on the 100th anniversary. It's been submitted to the Albuquerque Journal, and I'm being told that it should run in the journal sometime this week. So hopefully we will see that here sometime in the next 2 or 3 days.
Mr. Chair?
That's awesome.
Okay.
Paul?
Yeah, this is Paul. I was wanting to follow up on at the December meeting. There was in the works to have a joint meeting with DVR and the State Workforce Development Board. Is that still possibly going to take place?
Great question. So, no. So that was the potential February 6th date. And I think that the logistics of bringing something such as that off, where you would literally have 60 board members, to do that in a way that every board member could hear every other board member and the audience could hear the board members would be so difficult that it would just be really daunting. So what we ended up doing was to invite people from the Rehab Council. So Tom O'Brien attended representing our council. Bernadine Chavez was there as well. Bernadine, I think there were one or two people from, besides yourself, you kind of wear two hats, from the DVRSRC.
Yes, Sarah Machado was there, Rebecca Holland, and I think that's it. Yeah.
Sandy.
Oh, that's right, Sandy Sandoval.
Mr. Trapp, Mr. Chair, everybody, Art was there to represent the commission.
Our Schreiber.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we did try to kind of have the spirit of that. It's really, really difficult to pull off a joint meeting like that.
Makes sense.
And that was pre-pandemic.
Yeah, it might actually be easier to do it now, but I had a workforce board meeting about 3 weeks ago, and they actually went very, very well. But when you're doing a roll call with about 40 board members, it takes a while.
Yeah, I do want to say I did attend the public meetings for the state plan that the workforce sponsored, and I think there were a lot of problems with them. I don't think they really truly made the meetings accessible. There was one big huge meeting at the convention center, and they had this exercise for folks. It was a warm-up exercise with these little puzzles on the table, and you had to undo the puzzle and put it back together. And actually, you know, the table that I was sitting at were folks from DVR, and I didn't get to see Greg or Kelly, but Josh Pondo, who is an employee of DVR and who only has one arm, he said, how am I supposed to do this? So they didn't think about those kinds of things. And then they were doing small groups, and then they had closed captioning through the CART system, which is for a big session. So the folks who had any kind of a hearing impairment had to all go up to the CART, and that didn't work either. They should have had interpreters, but anyway, it was disheartening to me because I feel like workforce still doesn't get it. You know, they sponsored this, they said they were inclusive, and you know, they did not really look at the disability community, and you know, they're really vying to take DVR into their system, and if they don't get it for the state plan and those pieces of the state plan that apply to people with disabilities, I have some concerns, but those are my comments.
Ms. Brittany, I appreciate your comments there. I did have the puzzle, and I was intrigued by it. I was able to get it apart and actually get it back together again. The whole trick was if you could get it back together. And I was very, very tempted to say, and I did not say, but I was very tempted to say that, you know, what I've learned, and that was the question that they asked, what did you learn from the puzzle exercise? What I've learned is that it's a lot easier to take something apart than it is to put it back together again. And I think that's a lesson that maybe we should all, you know, keep in mind there. You know, we really do have these systems in place, and you know, if you take it apart, it might be a whole lot more difficult to put it back together again.
Greg, that applies to so many things in our current state of affairs.
Yeah.
You know, defunding the police departments to whatever. It, you know, it is a whole lot easier to just take stuff apart than truly understand.
Everybody, meet my lovely wife, Tanya. Wave at the computer.
Hey, Tanya.
Hey, Tanya.
Hi, Tanya.
Hi, Tanya.
Hi, Tanya.
Hi, Tanya.
All right.
I
want
to photobomb you, Greg. Okay. She stood behind you for quite a while. So I have one thing I want to share with the council. In early March, I attended the North American Blackberry Association annual conference in St. Louis just before everything shut down, and I was elected their vice president. It's a two-year term, and it's a not a membership vote, but it's a consensus of the board that the vice president then moves up to be president for 2 years. So pretty confident I'm the first blind vice president, and that I'll be the first blind president. I'm always the only blind person at these farm-related conferences, and people come up to me and ask me, how do you do it? And I say very slowly and very deliberately and with a lot of help.
Tom, I want to congratulate you sincerely and honestly on that. That is a significant accomplishment that you are to be really commended for.
Mm-hmm.
And having said that, I will also say that that is a very important position.
Mm-hmm.
Very good, Greg. Yeah. Mm. All right.
Sorry, I could not resist.
No, that was completely appropriate. Are there any other comments or anything else we need to talk about?
Mr. Chairman, we do obviously the date of the next meeting. I think that we probably should plan on meeting again here, probably in August at least. I think it's beneficial to have these meetings, and in one respect they're easier, but we want to make sure that we are having meetings so that we can comply with our statutory obligations. So before you and Urja go off the board, I think we should have at least one additional meeting.
And there's probably a small chance we could do it in person in the Albuquerque office.
Small chance.
Very small.
5% chance, if that.
So do you, does anybody have a calendar out? I'm afraid to try go to my phone calendar.
I have one out.
I've got one out. Yeah, okay. I can go to mine as well. I've got one.
Be with you in just a second, Tanya.
Who wants to go to their calendar? I've got mine up if we need to use mine.
I've gone to mine. Is there a particular day of the week that works better for everybody? It's still an important question. Despite our current circumstances, some of us have regular Zoom meetings that we are now attending, or there's webinars. One of the things that this has allowed us is a lot of training time.
It has. So what I'm going to do...
They're kind of off the radar for me, because I'm in a lot of meetings with Dion on Wednesday.
What day did you say, Katie?
Wednesdays.
Okay. Mr. Trapp, you had something?
Yeah, so we set a date for the commission board. We cannot do that, but I don't have that on my schedule. I don't know, Jim, if you and Kelly wrote that down.
Was it the 23rd, Greg?
That sounds right.
Well, 23rd is a Sunday, so. Well,
that's not right.
I will need to look at my notes. Hang on.
Greg, I can check the minutes real quick.
Let's see.
Hold on one second, Jim. You've got the meeting. I've got to deal something.
Yeah,
hold on.
Sure. I don't see it on my calendar. I have a workforce board, but I don't have a commission board.
It would be toward the end of August, because September 1st would be when the request budget. Would be due. Yes.
Kevin, are you still with us?
Yes. I have on my calendar, August 26th is the next commission meeting.
Correct.
All right. So we can't do it that day. I've got an appointment on the 11th of August, and we've got a state use meeting on. Let's see, August 19th. So any day other than the 11th, 19th, or 26th.
Could we do the 6th?
Sure.
Which is a Thursday.
All right, what time?
That sounds good. I know it's highly likely that, I mean, because that's around the time frame that public school starts, but I just got a text from somebody that said that a hybrid schedule is going to be more likely one of the options for the fall, where we'd go 2 days to school and then the rest would be remote.
So Lila, when do you start school? Would you be starting by the 6th?
It's usually that Thursday, but I think it'll be fine because I'm planning even to spend some time with my dad, and maybe I can work it out where I can be there, and especially if we're gonna start on a remote schedule.
What time are we looking at for the 6th?
Well, it's 4:30 now, so it took a little longer than I had thought or hoped. But so I would suggest we start at 9, and we will have plenty of time. We'll have to see what is taking place by that time. But would 9 o'clock work?
9 a.m.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And Kelly will make lunch arrangements to be delivered to all of us.
You know, it's funny. It's funny you mentioned that,
because Panera, we have an account representative with Panera. And I kid you not, she just wrote me, and I've actually spoken to her 2 months ago and told her that there was really nothing she could do for us. And they are actually, I mean, I don't think we would actually go through with this, but it's funny that you mention it, because they had different, like, multi-delivery options and things like that. Although, Tom, you're kind of out in the boondocks. I don't know if Panera would go out there for you.
Tom, you can come in and eat with me in the other room.
All right. Well, folks, I thought this was going to be my last meeting, but you're going to make us do it again.
Yeah, this went so well. Tom, congratulations. I thought this went well. Audrey, thank you so much for helping with the Zoom and making everything work. I think, Audrey, you were putting up pictures of me and Tom and Kelly. I don't know if we got Jim's picture there, but at least it might have been upside down, but it was there.
Hey, Greg, we probably should have told you this earlier, but you've been live video the whole time.
I've been what?
You've been live on video the whole time.
Oh, I know that. No, but there's another picture frame.
It was at the beginning.
Right now, because if I put yours up again, Greg, I figured it may confuse users, because your window would be up with you live and then with your image.
Okay, well, we don't want to confuse folks, but Audrey, thank you so much. I appreciate your doing this. Kelly, thank you for co-hosting.
Audrey, do you have a minute for me to try one more piece of technology to take about 2 minutes
to see if it'll
work?
No problem.
Okay.
All right, so Tom, in the meantime, we can adjourn, and Audrey can keep the link open for anything you want to do.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, everyone. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
This is Lila. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Lila.
Bye, Greg.
Thanks, Paul.
It was good to see everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye, Kelly. Bye, Paul. Bye-bye. Bye, Berna. Bye, Urcha. Good night, John Boy. Sorry, I had to get that one in. We'll see you, Tom. Bye-bye.
So Audrey,
should I probably stop the recording?
Yes.
Stop that real quick and save it, and then we can continue.